Here it goes.
Nothing's good, the news is bad. The heat goes on and it drives you mad.
Welcome to National Liberty Alliance's weekly conference call. Today is Monday, July 11th, 2016. We broadcast live every Monday from 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time till midnight. If you're listening live over another network and you would like to ask a question or make a comment, our call-in number is 605-562-3140. Our participant code is 385-698. If anyone would like to email a question, you can send your questions to questions@nationallibertyalliance.org. Please support our business partners. You can see the banners on the right-hand side of our website, of which the proceeds go to support National Liberty Alliance's effort to save America. Also, please support National Liberty Alliance by donating $5 a month or more. Click on our donation tab up on the top right. Okay, tonight's scripture reading is Proverbs chapter 2. My son, if thou will receive my words and hide my commandments with thee, so that thou incline thine ears unto wisdom and incline thy heart unto understanding, yea, if thou criest after knowledge and liftest up thy voice for understanding, if thou seek her as silver and search for her as for hid treasure, then shalt thou understand the fear of the Lord and find the knowledge of God. For the Lord giveth wisdom, out of his mouth cometh knowledge and understanding. He layeth up sound wisdom for the righteous. He is a buckler to them that walk uprightly. He keepeth the path of judgment and preserveth the way of his saints. Then shalt thou understand righteousness and judgment and equity, yea, every good path. When wisdom entereth into thine heart, and knowledge is pleasant unto thy soul, discretion shall preserve thee, understanding shall keep thee, to deliver thee from the way of the evil man, from the man that speaketh forward things, who leave the paths of uprightness to walk in the ways of darkness, who rejoice to do evil and delight in the forwardness of the wicked, whose ways are crooked, and they forward in their path, to deliver thee from the strange woman, even from the stranger which flattereth with her words, which forsaketh the guide of her youth and forgetteth the covenant of her God. For her house inclineth unto death, and her paths unto the dead. None that go unto her return again, neither take they hold of the path of life, that they may walkest in the way of a good man and keep the paths of the righteous. For the upright shall dwell in the land, and the perfect shall remain in it. But the wicked shall be cut off from the earth, and the transgressors shall be rooted out of it. That was Proverbs chapter 2. You know, someone shared a video with me, which I didn't get a chance to watch all of it yet, but in the very beginning there was a quote. It started off with a quote, and I'd like to read that quote. And it said that America is like a healthy body, and its resistance is threefold. Its patriotism, its morality, and its spiritual life. If we can undermine these three areas, America will collapse from within. Joseph Stalin. I know most of the people that come to this room knows who Joseph Stalin is, but I wonder how many young people even know who he is. And of course, America has lost her way. We've lost our patriotism. We've lost our relationship with God. But we've lost our morality. And we'll never save America without those three things, particularly our morality and our relationship with God. If people think that they could be blessed by the Creator's grace of having unalienable rights, which come from Him, and yet thumb our nose at Him, ignore morality, ignore a relationship with Him, then they're only fooling themselves. It's an impossibility. I'm trying to think who it was. I always thought it was Benjamin Franklin, but I think it was someone else. But in any event, I think it was Benjamin Franklin who said that man will either serve God or he will serve tyrants. There is no other choice. So we have to be ruled by God or ruled by man. And ruled by man will always bring us a tyrant, no matter how good an individual might seem to be in the beginning. The end thereof is always the same way. They've taken control of our way of life. They've taken control of our nation. I heard somewhere today on the news, or somebody talking somewhere on the radio, which spoke about the young people saying that they don't even bother anymore because there's nothing they could do about their government. That's how much apathy is out there in our young children and in the young people. They have no interest, no concern. You know, I wonder sometimes, it's very difficult to really move the people to get them active, to get them doing things. You know, we're always asking for money, and it's very, very difficult to get people to give even $5 a month. And that's pretty bad. That's apathy. If people don't believe in what we're doing, or if they do claim to believe in what we're doing especially, and can't give at least $5 a month, which is all we ask for, that's apathy. That's pretty bad. You know, we're always ringing the bell for people to get ready to do things. And the time has come. We have reached that point in time. We are about to lose America unless we, the people, collectively stand up and do something about it. National Liberty Alliance is doing something about it. We need that critical mass. And we will only get that critical mass when our huge membership, we have a huge membership, and we will only get that critical mass when our huge membership actually steps up and really gets involved. You know, things are always run by a few. A couple of hundred here and a couple of hundred there, you know, maybe 1,000. But we've got almost 6,000 people. We've got to wake the rest of them up. We've got to rekindle their memory on why they got involved with National Liberty Alliance, why they became a member. So we have to really work on that. We're doing everything we can here on a leadership role. As a matter of fact, we've put up a couple of new pages. And both of these pages can be found under the Welcome tab on our website. One is the NLA plan. We wanted to make it very clear what our plan is. And I think if people can really get that message, because I think some people miss that. They get the idea, but they don't really get the full plan. And to get the full plan, really, you have to really spend some time and start to get educated. But to get the basic plan, you know, in a nutshell, so to speak, you know, I don't know that everyone that joins our membership here really gets that. And maybe that's why some people fall asleep. So we put up a page called the NLA Plan, and there's two videos on that page. Most of us probably seen both of them. One is on the political process, and one is on the judicial process. And so now when people join our website, they're going to be brought. Well, actually, we have a second page. Let me put that. The second page is the special welcoming message. Now, I thought we'd have that done today. We should have this done tomorrow. We put together a PowerPoint video. And that PowerPoint video, when people join, they will be brought to that welcoming message. And the majority of the leadership of National Liberty Alliance is given a message, you know, has us saying a few things on a PowerPoint video. And so it's probably going to be about 45 minutes, might be as long as an hour. I don't think it'll be that long, but it could be. But this should give people a really good idea, in a nutshell, exactly what we're doing here, and to really understand how important the things are that we're doing here and how important it is for them to be paying attention and getting involved in doing something. Because we are about to lose America, and we're going to lose her this year unless we do something. And I know that's a big statement. I'm often, from year to year, for quite a few years now, going back maybe as long, maybe 2008, maybe even earlier than that, but particularly, you know, around 2008 and onward, I mean, all the things that have happened, the destruction that has happened within our nation, the economic, the monetary, problem that we have, the economic problems, the bailouts, the printing of money, the deficits. I mean, it just goes on and on and on. How can we continue to go? How can we continue to stay on our feet? And, of course, for these people, these insane people who want to rule the world, they have to control every aspect of everyone's life, so it seems. They're not happy unless they're doing that. These are sick people. They need to be brought to justice. And only we, the people, can bring them to justice. Because our elected officials, our servants in Washington certainly are not going to do it. They are the problem. and our elected officials in our capitals, our state capitals, they're not going to do it. They are the problem. They're all on the take. None of them are paying attention. They have no concern for the Constitution. They have no concern for we the people. There's very few of them that really are trying anything. And the few that I have seen that have gone to Washington or even into the state capital here in New York that seem to be good, they get lost in it, and they become them. And so these people are never going to help us. They're never going to save the nation. This is the job of the people. Jefferson was clear on this. JFK was clear on this. It's the people, okay? They're the only ones that are going to be able to save America. No one man can do it. No matter how, I remember when Ron Paul was running, a lot of people really felt, if he got in, he'd save America. But even he couldn't do it. You know, one person can't do it. It's going to take the whole group of people. It's going to take we the people. But anyway, I look from year to year and I see, wow, it just gets darker and darker. And you begin to wonder, are we going to make it through this year? Is this the year they're going to pull the plug? Are they going to pull it in the middle of the summer when it's really, really hot? Or are they going to pull it in the middle of winter and you'll freeze to death, you know? But I don't see the possibility of it going past this year. I really don't. There is so much that has happening in Europe and around the world internationally. And happening here in this nation, they're trying everything they can to get a black flag. And we're hearing things from everywhere, all kinds of things, martial law being moving forward. And they're looking to cause a lot of chaos. One of the Trump, I forget exactly where it was at, but one of the Trump rallies or something, I guess, preparing for his presidency and they're preparing thousands of people to go up there, out there to create problems. At least this is what we're hearing on the news. Maybe someone can give us some more information on that because I just forget where that was and what that was about. But anyway, now is the time. I took a commitment here in New York that I was going to build committees of safety and go, if I have to, from every county in New York State. There's 62 counties in New York, and we've done it before. We built the committee man process system up, and we actually started this movement here by building New York first. And we did go from county to county. We'd go out one or two times a week. Usually if we hit on a Saturday, we might hit two or three counties on a Saturday. Or if we went out on an evening during the week. But I'm recommitting myself because the committees of safety is going to be the salvation of America. The committees of safety is the grassroots. That's where the that's where the rubber meets the road. That's where the work has to be done. That's where the relationship with the sheriff has to be made. That's where the relationship with our local government has to be made. We have to befriend our government. They got a lot of problems, and we can go in and try to correct a lot of problems, but that's not what we need to do. We need to prepare for the one thing that they are not prepared for, and that is a national emergency, whereas the government claims that they need to come in to fix the problem, while we the people do what? Sit in their concentration camps or something? I mean, what are we going to do? We're not going to fix the problem? This is the people's problem. People need to roll up their sleeves. We need to fix this problem because that collapse is coming, and nothing's going to stop that collapse. The question is how hard is it going to hit us? Is it going to be a soft collapse? Is it going to be a soft landing? Or is it going to be a hard landing? A soft landing is where we, the people, prepared and we're ready and we brace ourselves for it and we're able to deal with it and prevent martial law from taking control. A hard landing will be where we, the people, are not ready. And I can tell you right now, we, the people, are not ready. We're not ready to catch America. We're not ready to prepare ourselves, to brace ourselves for what is about to come. People have no clue. I mean, they kind of hear and they think, but they really don't think about what's really going to happen. A monetary collapse means no food. It means no trucking. It means no electricity. It means no internet. It means third world is what it means. Nobody knows what's going to be going on. We need to prepare for this. We have to prepare for this. We have no choice. And if we don't, well, then guess what? It's our fault. So I'm going to be sending out an email to every member here in National Liberty Alliance here in New York, and I'm going to let them know that I'm coming to their county and to try to get together people in their counties, and I'm going to come give the message of the Committee of Safety, get them involved, get them connected, show them and teach them what they need to know about connecting with the sheriff and getting the sheriff on board with them and understanding the chain of command in emergency, because that's the only thing we have to make sure our local government knows. Only one thing. In a national emergency, the sheriff must take control. That's the constitutional requirement. The sheriff is in charge. And the governor of the state cannot repair and fix and help and assist and be compassionate in any way and get food to the people in every single town and every single city. It's just not possible. You know, in New York alone, we have, I think it's 960 towns in New York State and 62 cities. So we have over 1,000 towns and cities. No governor. No, there is no government in state government that can handle that problem. That's a local problem. That can only be dealt with locally. And we have to have that chain of command, that law and order, to make sure that the Constitution is still there when we get to the end of this emergency. And that's what's going to require the sheriff, a sheriff that understands his position and what it is that he needs to be doing. And we need to have the towns to understand, the local government to understand that he is the law and he is the law and order of that county. And that all police forces, every town, every village, every city is to pay obedience to that one individual in that town. His protocols must be kept. You know, they already know how to deal with basic emergencies. There's nothing we have to teach them about that. But we do have to make sure they understand the constitutional chain of command. And if we can just get that one message out, that they understand the constitutional chain of command, and they understand that it's an impossibility for the state to be able to take care of this problem. This is a people problem. This is a local government problem. They need to understand that the federal government can't possibly, even with the hundreds of thousands of foreign troops on American soil right now, and our founding fathers are turning in our grave over this one, hundreds of thousands. I know there's well over 600,000. I have no idea where the number is anymore, and that's years ago. But in any event, they got all of these troops on foreign soil. They got all of these all this equipment spread all over the place, and they think that they can control all of the problems. I forget how many cities and towns there were in all of America. I'm trying to think if I recall the number. It was a huge number. Let me think a minute. I don't remember. I'll have to look that up again. But there's no way that they can control that. And what are we to do, sit on our hands? I mean, this is the time when the people need to roll up their sleeves and take care of business. We need to make sure that the sheriff understands that we're there, we're behind them, if they need us for anything. We need to know that the town understands that they have to have a meeting place every day where people can come to kind of get their, you know, what do they need to do to get things back up and running again? People will be given jobs. They won't be getting paid, but they'll be getting food, maybe some electricity running a couple hours a day and different things, you know, bartering going on. But that can only be done by we the people. The federal government's plan is to seize everything, to shut down everything, take control of all of the vehicular activity, take control of any food, even your gardens. If you have food in your house, they want to take control of everything, and then they're going to divvy it out. They're going to expect people to go to their stupid camps, which I'm not going. But that's what they expect for people to do, and we can't trust anything of that. There's nothing they're going to have to do it at the end of a barrel of a gun. That's the only way they're going to accomplish this. They're going to have to force the people to comply, whereas we, the people, will willingly comply to roll up our sleeves and do the necessary things in our own towns where we know each other, we know our neighbors, and we will work with each other to help each other to get us through this time, this crisis that is coming to America. It's here. I had recently got it confirmed from another source, but nothing that I can really put my hands on, that Federal Reserve indeed did foreclose, was foreclosed upon on the international level. That's a huge thing, and the American people don't even know that. And again, I can't say 100% that's true because I just can't find it, you know, where you can say, here it is. But I'm just hearing from different sources. But another source came to me recently and confirmed that this is true. This has happened. And the Federal Reserve can print no more money, which means they've got sort of a deadline. I'm hearing it's August or September, and then the people will know. And that's when we'll have our bank holiday, and that's when all hell will break loose. Are we ready? Are you ready? What are you going to do about this? Are you going to start working in your states to make sure that every county in your state has a committee of safety? It's not good enough where one or two or three counties in America have a committee of safety. What good is that going to do? Now, we have to have a majority of our counties having committees of safety to keep stability in our country, to keep the Fed out, and to keep a constitutional control, constitutional command, and make sure that the Constitution survives this emergency that is coming to America, like it or not. It is coming to America. Nobody's going to be able to stop that. I read a couple of weeks ago a paper, the July 4th message. And on July 4th, we sent out this message. We filed it in all 94 federal district courts. We sent it by snail mail. So every court has it. And we send it out to thousands and thousands of people, elected individuals on the state level, Congress on the state level and U.S. Congress. We send it to everyone. All judges on the state level and the federal level, they all got this message. And, this message was really, to put them on notice that we know and that we're going to hold the Constitution. And at some point in time, we're going to hold them liable. But we did read that a couple of weeks ago. I'm not going to read that now. But there was recently something I was doing, and I'm looking for it. Maybe when I pass the mic, maybe later on I'll come and read this. But it was a message from JFK. I just can't find it at the moment. And he was talking about a revolution that is coming. And that revolution cannot be stopped. He spoke about it. We can't stop it, but we certainly could do something about it. We could make it a peaceful revolution. That's only if the people step up and do what they have to do on their local level. That's the only way it's going to happen. So I'm challenging everyone here that hears this message tonight, whether they're here live or they hear it on Memorex, on the videos, on our audios that we have on a Monday night page. A lot of people do download this program and listen, because it's too late for them or whatever. But in any event, I'm challenging everyone to make sure to get out, to work with others within your state. We are meeting every Thursday to try to prepare and get the people ready, okay? I am going, like I said, anybody who really wants to work on their state should be at the next Thursday meeting. And when you get two or three people together from one state and real serious and they want to do something, well, then we'll get a special message out to every single person in their state to make sure and send out the information that we're planning to do, a presentation in every county, we want to set up a schedule to do that. We get three or four people running throughout the state giving these presentations to get these committees of safety going. We have to work in haste. We have to do this in a couple of months. When we did the confirmations of the grand juries, and we went from every county in America to every county of America, I think it took us about 4 or 5 months to get all of New York done, or most of New York done. But to get the whole nation done, it took us about a year, I think. I should go back and look into the history here and to see exactly how long it took us. We don't have that kind of time. We need to do it in 2 months. You need to do your entire state in 2 months. You need to get them prepared. You need to get your county together. And inside your county, again, I'll use the example of Dutchess County, where I live in New York. We have 19 towns in two cities. So we have 19, 20, 21 communities, okay? In those 21 communities, we have one sheriff. But we need to, you know, all you do is start off with whoever you start off with. You get a half a dozen of people together from a Liberty group and other members within National Liberty Alliance together in your county or whatever. And you get this committee of safety going. But your goal is to get at least one person from every town and city, at least one, preferably two, and if you can, more than that. But that would put us, let's say we got 20 communities here, so that would be at least 40 people. 40 people for a committee of safety is pretty decent size. And the key thing is working with the sheriff. Once you get the sheriff on your side and that sheriff understands what his power and authority is, and we did a 38-page paper on that, which can be downloaded up here at nationallibertyalliance.org. Click on committees of safety and you'll find this information for the sheriff right there and a lot of other information on how to approach your sheriff, your first meeting with your sheriff, the second meeting with the sheriff. And the key thing is working with your sheriff first, befriending the sheriff, making sure he understands his power and authority, making sure that he knows that you people are concerned citizens and you know and he knows that there is a monetary collapse coming to America. And if he just thinks about it, he'd have to appreciate the fact that that means there's going to be hard times. And his job's going to be real hard. And he needs to be ready for this. He needs to understand the chain of command, the constitutional chain of command. He is in charge of that county. And once he understands that, and that's the only thing. We know that he knows his job. We know that he knows what he has to do as far as being a peace officer. But the towns know what they got to do to some degree. I mean, in any emergency, they've got that already down pat. They got the fire department and the ambulance and different police services and so on and so forth. But they all need to know the chain of command and that the federal government cannot possibly help. And that we would need to keep the federal government out so we, the people, can take care of our own business. And we can save America. You got 2 months. That's all you got. July and August. And if by the grace of God we can get September and October, well, let's be thankful if we can get that. 4 months. You got 2 months. What are you doing this week? What are you doing next weekend? Are you going to prepare to go out there and get your county going and start working with your sister counties and get some people together and start touring the state to make sure we get these committees of safeties going so that the people get in touch and tap in with the local government and prepare for this great emergency that is coming to America? We need to get our heads out of the holes. It's coming to America. It's already here. We have to put this in front, first and foremost, in our mind constantly. Not that we need to get frightened about this or get neurotic about it, but we have to keep this in mind and do something. We have to get serious. We have to get involved. Anyway, on our we will be putting our special message up there, called the special welcoming message underneath a welcome tab. And when people join, people will see this audio. They'll be delivered right to this page where this video will be, and which will give them the message, hopefully really give them a real good idea on what we're doing and what they can do to help and how important it is for them to get involved to save America, because it's up to you. And don't think that the other guy is doing it, because I can assure you he's not. So it's up to you. You got to do it. And you got to get others involved. Anyway, once it's up there, we'll put out a message throughout. We'll send out an email, let everybody know. You can go out and watch the video, and maybe you can make comments on the video. Tell us what you think, maybe next Monday. And the comment section will be open underneath, so people can write comments down there too. But the NLA plan page is ready right now. That page will be ready tomorrow. I hope tomorrow, by the end of the day. Again, we have just a couple more people that need to give us their audio so that we can put them into the PowerPoint page here, and then we'll be able to post it. It'll go up on YouTube, and it'll be put on the special welcoming page, and then, of course, people will be landing there when they join. But we do want everyone all of our members to make sure they get out there and look at these two videos and watch, well, no, it's one video, and read the message that'll be either before or after, or probably both, on this video, and then also get out to the plan that you could do today, tomorrow, because that's there now. Okay, let's see where we're going here. We've made the announcement before. We are doing certificates of completion for the civic courses and the constitutional courses, so anybody who would like to have that done, you know, get a certificate of completion if you've completed the courses. Just go up to highlight free courses on our webpage on the blue line, free courses, highlight it, click on certificate of completion. Now, it's extremely important that people read very carefully. I've spent a lot of time trying to decipher over the weekend numerous people who have sent me things and they're handwritten. I can't read half of the stuff they've written. They leave out pieces of information. The most important piece of information I need to find your records is your username. And your username is not your email address. I need your username to be able to find the information to confirm the date that you finished these courses and so on and so forth and be able to get this out. Anyway, I do have them all done, all but one. There's just one I left that I haven't been able to confirm yet. But I'll try to get that done tomorrow. And then these are going in the mail. I got a pile here right now in my office, and I'll put them out in tomorrow's mail, and we should be caught up on it. If you send in for a... I got someone who didn't send me an email address, didn't give me a phone number, and the only thing I have is a snail mail address, which means I have to sit down and write a letter to this person and mail it to the mail. I'm not going to do that. I don't have the time to do that. I got way too many other things to be doing. I'm not going to do that. So if you want, and I got the message up here, I made it very clear, read very carefully. Read carefully. I say it twice. Please include all the following information. Type it. Don't write it. Type it. Because if we can't read your information, we can't complete your requests. If anybody is waiting longer than 2 weeks, not counting right now, because these are going out tomorrow. Like I said, there's only one that I have to confirm. So anybody who's requested, they'll be getting that the next day. A couple of people probably already got them because I did get some out over the weekend. If anybody's waiting longer than 2 weeks, then I can't find your information, and you should go back and reread the page and follow the instructions and make sure I get the information. I need a phone number, because if you give me a username and I can't find you with your username, at least I can call you on the phone. But, follow the instructions. Give me all the information for anybody who wants it. Now, we are charging $20 for each certificate. Our courses are free. We don't charge a penny. We don't charge anything for anything we do here at National Liberty Alliance. All of our educational programs, everything is free. And we have two courses that are, courses that actually give you, we track your process and we confirm the fact that you completed the course. We have, of course, one on the civics and one on the Constitution. those are free also. But we have to earn some money here somehow with National Liberty Alliance. We have to get some money so we can pay the bills and do other things. Matter of fact, I want to talk about a small project I want to get going. But anyway, so we decided we're going to charge $20 for each certificate. So anybody who wants a certificate, just send us a check and type the information out on a piece of paper and mail it to us. Don't write it unless you really got really good printing abilities, because I can't read half the stuff that people send me. So, one of the other things we do or want to do is I want to send out papers to Congress. I think we need to get the 4th of July message to Congress and maybe another message. And so that's 540 envelopes or mailing we'll have to do, probably about 4 pages. So that's going to cost money, and of course we operate on donations. If we don't have the money, we're not going to do it. But I also want to get really a large one going out, at least to Congress. I'd like to expand that to also marshals. I don't think we're going to do sheriffs because it's like 3,000. Although we will do this through faxes anyway, so we'll fax everybody. But I'd like to get a hard paper, snail mail, to certain elected officials and really, you know, prepare, letting them know that we're watching and we're, you know, we're seeing what's going on here with their martial law and so on. But again, we can't do that without money. You know, we have to pay for the paper, we have to pay for the toner, we have to pay for the envelopes and the mailing and so on. So, again, you know, everybody needs to do what they can. And the National Liberty Alliance is supported by just a small handful of people, giving $5 a month or more. There are some people who are giving 50, some people giving 20. Might have one or two people giving 100, maybe one. And but that's it. We're operating on, you know, small donations. But not enough is doing that. So there's a lot of things we want to do we can't do. So look at, everybody should give $5. If you think America is worth it, because we've got the only viable plan. You know, someone wrote me a letter recently, and I get this from time to time that when I make that kind of a statement. Well, I'd like to know what other plan is out there to save America, a peaceful plan like ours, because I haven't seen it. I haven't found it. That's why we started National Liberty Alliance, because I couldn't get involved with one that actually had a viable plan, a real plan, a plan that made sense, a plan that was logical. And we've got the real plan, the only possible plan to save America peacefully right here is what we're doing at National Liberty Alliance. And so if you think that this is worthwhile, if America is worthwhile saving, and you think that we have the plan, my goodness, give us $5 a month, please. Put your money where your belief is, you know. And, of course, if you can give more, give us more. But again, you know, we are having pains right now trying to keep up with bills, and we have a lot we want to do that we can't do unless we have money. Just can't do it. You know, we went out on the last project we did. I went out in faith, believing that we'd get the money up. So we spent bill money to get everything out. We sent it all the sheriffs, and you know, a lot of we sent it out to a lot of elected officials everywhere, and. And we did that sheriff's campaign, which cost us quite a bit of money. But we have never really truly recovered from that. And so, really, if you believe in America and you want to save her and you believe that we have the plan, and you should get involved first and foremost. We need you more involved more than anything else, even if it's an hour a week. But everybody needs to put in time to do what has to be done. And especially your involvement should be mostly on your local level, on your grassroots level, getting this committee of safety going. And then, of course, secondly, you know, sending us $5 a month or more. You know, I have people that send $5 a month or more. Well, they send $5 a month, and they make the mention that they're on limited incomes. They get like $800 or $700 and some odd dollars a month that they're living on Social Security. But they stick their hands in their pockets and put $5 a month they get to us every month. And these people are suffering as it is. And they're taking $5 out of their money. That's how much they believe and they know what we're doing is the right thing. We got the plan. And all I can say is I can assure you that we're doing the right thing. And the enemy has not got control of National Liberty Alliance. We, the people, are in charge of National Liberty Alliance. So, anyway, let's do what we got to do here. All right, I mentioned also a couple of weeks ago we started back up with the habeas corpuses. Things are still a little slow in the goings, but we're there. Just, you know, we have Jim and Kelly who are working on the paperwork, and there's a little bit of a learning curve, so they're moving slowly, and we're triple-checking our work and making sure it's right. But that's going to start to speed up, and we should be able to catch up pretty quickly and get ahead of the game very soon. But those things are going on for anybody who needs to get the habeas corpus going. If your name isn't out there on the list, anybody who's got a habeas corpus, I still get letters from people wanting to know about Linda has the papers, and she told me this. I mean, that's a month ago or so. Linda's not handling this work anymore. So they haven't been paying attention. And so we've got a new policy at this point in time. Anybody who wants us to do habeas corpus must be enrolled at bare minimum our constitutional course and moving along on it. If they're not in our constitutional course, we're not going to do the habeas corpus. Very, very few exceptions. We have some people that are homeless. One person was living out of a car. They didn't have good access to a computer. They had to go to a library, but life was tough. So, hey, you know, we have compassion, of course, and, you know, we're sensible. We'll do the logical, the sensible, honorable thing. But generally speaking, if people are not taking this course and they're not interested in educating themselves, and they're not interested in taking care of their own business and figuring out what needs to be done, why should we help them? We'll put our time to help someone who wants to help themselves. Also, we're expecting people who are doing this paperwork for to get involved, roll up their sleeves, get involved with National Liberty Alliance. Let's solve the big problem so this problem doesn't happen to them again. So we're expecting people to get into this constitutional course at bare minimum if they want us to do habeas corpus. So anybody who wants to do habeas corpus, anybody who's got paperwork in that hasn't got the habeas corpus going out, and anybody who's got the habeas corpus out already knows it. And we got tracking up here for that. But anybody else, if they're not renewing their paper in the past couple of weeks to a month, they're not using the new forms, then their paperwork is not with us. We just couldn't put the old paperwork together. We had to start fresh. We made it very, very simple. So look, at just download the paperwork, read the instruction very, very carefully, go to help, highlight help, and come down and click on help with abuse of courts. Read the instructions very, very carefully. Download the two forms necessary. One is a template on the affidavit. The other one is a intake form for the habeas corpus. It's a one-pager. It's very simple. It's information you got to have. I mean, it's the name of the judge, the name of the court, the name of the prosecutor. Basic information that everyone that's in court should have. You can go down to the court if you're missing any of that information and ask for what's called a docket. Or you could take that form down there and don't explain to them what it is, but you could take it down there and go through the list. Well, what's the name of the person here for this or that? They'll give you the paperwork to get the information. So, but it's basic information. But anyway, follow the instructions very carefully and get your paperwork in. And as soon as it's all in, we'll let you know, we'll acknowledge the fact that we've got it all, and your name will appear on the registry for this. Let's see where this is at. You can track habeas corpus. Is this tracking here? Yeah, track the habeas corpus petitions. You click on that, there's a habeas corpus tracker. If your name is not up on this page, we don't have your intake. You can call and write letters and keep telling us that we have it. If it's not on this page, we don't have it. Okay? So people need to get up here and see if their name is up here. And if it's not, get your paperwork in if you're expecting us to do something with it. All right. Let's see what else we have here. Hi, Gary, are you here? Do we have any questions? I know I saw some questions. I didn't print them out. Is Gary here today? I guess not. I don't see him.
No, I haven't seen him. No, he's not.
All right. Connect with Gary during the week and let him know if he's not going to make it to the meeting, that maybe he should at least make sure that you or someone else collects these questions so we can respond to questions. So we probably have questions from the week before last and this week, and we'll try to catch up with them next week. All right, I think that brings us to the end of anything I have to say right now. We're going to move over to Brent. Brent, are you with us? I see your name out there, so *6 to unmute yourself. Brent is the author of Excellence in Common Law, and his website is commonlawyer.com. And Brent's going to take the mic for a while and teach us something, and then we'll open up for Q&A for Brent for 20 minutes or so or whatever. Brent, go right ahead.
Thanks, John. John, I recently heard a leader of Islam say this. He said the ordinary individual is too small-minded to make decisions for himself. And this Islamic leader continued with this. He said, progress is possible only as every individual submits to an all-powerful sovereign. I'll repeat that one. Progress is possible only as every individual submits to an all-powerful sovereign. Those words, those two quotes, are from Barack Hussein Obama, or at least the man that calls himself Obama, and he said that at the Bilderberg meeting in the year 2014, a couple of years ago. But this statement of his, that progress is possible only as every individual submits to an all-powerful sovereign, Islamic people, Arab people, and other people of Islam understand that much. And Christian folk, by and large, in Christendom, not Christendom, D-O-M, but D-O-U-M-B, most folk that call themselves Christian folk don't understand that, don't acknowledge it, and it seems to me that they've never even really thought about it. But the godless crowd, the lawless crowd, I say godless in the sense of the true God, they've chosen their God. And when Barack Hussein Obama says that progress is possible only as every individual submits to an all-powerful sovereign, well, he understands something that Christians don't. The problem is, of course, that his all-powerful sovereign is himself and other like-minded persons, especially those at the Bilderberg meeting in the year 2014. That's what he thinks, and they think, about all other men that are above them. All other men and women are too small-minded to make decisions for themselves. Therefore, we must make decisions for them. And they're moving rapidly, and the acceleration toward that goal is exponential at this point. And as all Islamic sultans of the past, and that's really what he is, to put it in Arabic words, he's a sultan. He is committed to slavery and fulfilling his physical lusts, including murder, and in a word, domination. Domination, everything about the evil empire, whether it's Romanism, Islam, or Phariseeism, is about domination. It is lawless. It is godless. At the beginning this evening, John mentioned three things: patriotism, and then he spoke about morality, and then there was one other thing that was related. I'm trying to think what it was. John, do you remember what it was exactly? Patriotism, morality?
Spiritual life.
Spiritual life. That's right. I should have written them down, but I'll remember them now. But those three things, patriotism is, that's not an English word, but it means love of country, love of, to be precise, the fatherland. Patriotism, from the language in which that root is taken, is in the masculine. It's love of fatherland, love of the land. And, by the way, love of the land is spirituality, and pluralism is more morality, I should say, is really only worthwhile as it is morality within the law of the true lawgiver. All three of those things are inextricably bound together. Love of land, that's patriotism. Spirituality, well, it better be for the right reason and for the right God. And the way to do that is to, of course, obey him. And in this life, obedience, the blessing of God comes to those that are obedient. They must be committed to learning his law and his government, and his government is his law. And we're talking about that, have been, the last few weeks. I appreciate the opportunity that John and the others get to come and speak about what I call, and others have called, I call him, when I say this, our Declaration of 76 calls it two volumes, the laws of nature and written creation. The laws of nature's God, the Bible. We've been talking about the militia of the several states. Is it part of the lawgiver's plan for government? And I say, yes, it is. It's observable in the nature of things. That first volume, God's Revelation, is built and its law. And it's also expounded explicitly and particularly in our Bible. No people in the history of Adam's race have had such a forthright and clear explanation and expression of the law of what we call the militia as have Americans, excepting ancient Israel, 12 tribes of ancient Israel. But ours is clear, too. Our Constitution sets it forth. It is a common law doctrine. It's common law doctrine. It's an ancient doctrine. The militia, called anciently in Anglo-Dane England, called the Third, F-Y-R-D. We call it the militia today. It's a Latin. The militia is the people. Our Constitution says the people of the United States. We the people. That phrase, the people, refers to the militia. And that is lifted from the Old Testament Hebrew, ha'am. Often used in the Old Testament to speak of the people, the armed ones, of the nation of the 12 separate tribes of Israel. But our Constitution sets it forth this way. In four militia clauses, the first militia clause charges the Congress with providing for the rules of the separate states for calling forth a militia. And it also says that Congress can set the standard when the president can call forth the militia, and only for three reasons: to execute the laws of the suppress insurrections and repel invasions, these and no other. That's our Congress. That's their job, respecting the militia of the several states. That's the first militia clause. The second militia clause reserves to the states respectively, I'm quoting our Constitution, appointment of the officers of each of the states and the authority of training the militia according to the discipline prescribed by Congress. So Congress has a job under the first militia clause. The states, that means the legislature and the governor, has a job under the second militia clause. And then the third militia clause tells us, delegates to the president of the United States, whoever it may be, a particular job, and it gives, delegates to the president, our Constitution does, the authority over a member of the states of a state's militia, but only when called into the actual service of the United States. And we've mentioned that the governor of each state of the states and the president of the United States have what we call concurrent jurisdiction over the calling forth of the militia. And the first one to call the forth in any particular circumstance or time has jurisdiction over the militia. The governor calls forth the militia or any part of the militia of the state of his state, he has jurisdiction. If the president of the United States calls forth any militia of any state or any part of any militia of any state or the whole militia of the United States in any of the three reasons we mentioned above that the Constitution sets forth, then the president has authority over those persons of the militia. And then finally, the fourth militia clause doesn't delegate anything. The other three militia clauses delegate powers. The other three militia clauses. Our Constitution delegates nothing but recognizes the right of the people to keep and bear arms as far as any infringement of that right at any time. Infringement, that means nibbling around the fringes, the edges. But we left off last time talking about the particular part of that fourth militia clause, namely, the part that says that a militia should be well-regulated, and we talked about the word regular, the root regular in our Constitution. What does it mean? It's also used in the Commerce Clause. Commerce is to be regular between the states. But regular means to be ready. It means to be constant. Keep and bear arms. That's constant. Keeping them and carrying them with you wherever you go. That's what regular means. We distinguish between the, for instance, the regular Navy versus the reserves. The regular Navy is always armed, always loaded down with ammunition, always on watch, on patrol of the seas, online, as sailors say, and ready to fight if need be. Enforce the rights of the United States. That's regular Navy. Always ready. Indeed, for one to be ready to fight at a moment's notice, notice means one must keep one's firearm in his home, loaded, and when he leaves his home, he must bear a loaded firearm on his person. That means regular. In short, the Second Amendment's well-regulated militia, those words, refers to those individuals of the people carrying loaded guns. And the security of our country, says our Second Amendment, depends upon such an armed militia among us. And moreover, any government infringements that may prevent, this is what infringement means, to prevent, aid, or even chill, C-H-I-L-L, this personal right to keep a fair arms by requiring permits, background checks, mechanical regulations, open-ended regulations, etc., of firearms, make our country insecure. You see, if you overload the fellow with regulations concerning firearms, he will, as our courts have said of other constitutional rights, he will feel the chill of his rights. He will be a little bit in trepidation to act, to do what his duty is. What is his duty? His duty before God, his fundamental right, not delegated by the Constitution, not given to him by government, but dropped on him individually by his Creator. That's what we call a fundamental right, a right that is delegated direct from God to man. And self-defense and defense of others, family, friends, and neighbors, and one's country, falls into that category. That's what infringement is. To impede, to hamper, to prevent, or even to chill. We say, for example, and our courts said, that anything that chills the right of free speech is unconstitutional. Well, the same thing stands true of the Second Amendment. Fundamental responsibility. That's what a right is. People say a right, every right is accompanied by a duty. I know what people mean when they say that, but I believe it should be said strong, because every right is a duty. That's what the old Germanic word right means, duty. They have other words. It's German or brought to us by the Anglo-Saxons. These Germans people still stresses duty. But the well-regulated militia is the very regular. That answers the word well-regulated. Very regular.
I think we're losing you there, Brent. Is it me or is it Brent that's going in and out?
I'm here now, I hope.
Yeah, I'm kind of hearing you. You've broken up, though.
My phone, no doubt. Oh, I'll tell you what.
Yep.
Are you still there? Can you hear me all right, John?
We can hear you. You're coming through clear now, so continue. It was
okay,
just for a short while. Yeah.
Thanks for letting me know. Indeed, the ever-ready militia is always armed and ever ready to fight upon threat. If the threat comes fast, without awaiting official orders from distant command, a fella needs to be ready. In the case of an emergency that demands immediate action, and our history bears this out, I can think of two instances where Andrew Jackson, to become president of the United States, acted without authority from anyone with the militia of Tennessee. He was, at that time, the commander of the militia of Tennessee. And time did not permit him, in those days there were no telegraphs, of course, telephones, time did not permit him to communicate with his superiors. In that case, it would have been the governor of the state. When the threat comes fast, men need to be ready. And that's what well-regulated is meant to address, the threat that comes fast. They need to keep one's firearm in ready. Here's another good word that answers to regulated. Steady. Ready and steady use. Ever ready. Now, one other illustration I'll this, an illustration from our own history, illustrating the constitutional meaning of the word regular. Immediately after the Japanese attacked Pearl Harbor, General George C. Marshall, knowing that his country was under immediate threat of more vicious attacks or even invasion, he began to issue orders to staff officers by telephone. No time for formalities of official letters or telegrams. And one officer, upon receiving General Marshall's call by telephone, ordering him to Washington, D.C. without the least delay, and ordering him to be prepared to stay for the indefinite duration of need, this officer requested from General Marshall 24 hours to the safe relocation of his family. General Marshall, however, reminded him that he was regular Army and asked him if he knew that his country was at war. And this fellow answered yes, whereupon General Marshall demoted him, passed over him, and called another to fill the position intended for him. Because to General Marshall, regular Army meant instant and ever-ready Army. And God indeed calls his people to have their staff in their hand, their hat on their head, their shoes on their feet, and be ready. And I cite you again, I might have done this before, I'll do it one more time, to those words of Luke chapter 22, where Jesus Christ, speaking to his disciples, said, "But now," and he made a distinction between what had gone before and what would continue up even till our own time. Well, that's all I have for this evening, John. If there are any questions, as long as I can be heard, I'm willing to entertain them if you want to do that.
Okay, thank you, Brent. Yeah, let's open up for callers. Let me go open up the Q&A. All right, if anybody has any questions or comments for Brent, just hit star 6, get into the queue, and Brent will answer some questions for the next 20 minutes or so. Okay, let's see. We have Eric from Georgia. Go right ahead, Eric.
Brent, could you talk about the 12 men? Sorry for the background noise. The 12 men who wrote the Bible, I believe it's 12 men. Can you tell me about them just in general? I'd just love to hear what you know about it and hear it from you. I didn't catch
what you said, Eric. 12 men?
Oh, that's what I've heard. I don't know. Who wrote the Bible? Yeah. Was it 12 psalmists, bishops? Yeah.
No,
I mean, I don't know.
Yeah, I'm not familiar with that. I am familiar with the idea that the number 12 has tremendous meaning throughout the revelation of God and in the economy and government of God. The number 12 indicates somehow, in most instances that I've seen it's used, and I'm not the first one to observe this. Men much more learned than me have said it in the past, but it has to do with ruling and rule and government. And therefore, we have our jury. You know, people say, which one of the branches of government has the final word on what is lawful and what is not, what is constitutional, what is not, and it's popular today to say the Supreme Court has that as the branch of government, and that's not true. The jury, even our Constitution, makes the point that facts that the jury set forth, and the facts will dictate the case. They will even dictate the law, by the way. But that's unappealable, unquestionable, unreviewable, except according to the rules of common law. Of course, that means if there's something that was amiss with the jury, sometimes that does happen, by the way. The jury will break the rules of due process. That has happened. I've been involved in cases where that's happened. But the jury, the 12-person, the 12-man jury, is the final word in individual cases. And that is the definition. That is the definition of the word even used in the Bible by the Apostle James in his epistle. The word lawgiver, anciently, the word lawgiver means the final decider of right and wrong in individual instances. That's what a jury does. And even in the Old Testament of the Bible, such persons are called gods, small g. And Jesus Christ substantiates that statement of David in the Psalms in the Newer Testament, what a god is. I spoke at the beginning, that higher sovereign power of that would-be sultan, Barack Hussein Obama. Of course, he wants to be that person, of course. But that higher power, that all-powerful sovereign, as he puts it, we have an all-powerful sovereign. He is the maker of heaven and earth. And it's his law that governs us, whether we acknowledge it or not. And the consequences of not obeying it or obeying it are unavoidable, unchangeable, immutable. And once a person grasps that idea and accepts it, then he can begin to really live. But the number 12, by God's immutable law, has come down to us. And isn't it of great curiosity that it has come to us in our common law tradition, our law of the land, the 12-man jury, and how important it is to us? And I've tried to trace it back, and I'm continuing to look, and I've read the books that men have tried to do exhaustive studies on why we have a 12-man jury. And amazingly, no conclusive answers are given, except to say that we can take it back to the revelation of God and the connection between the Bible and our common law is lost, that it becomes disjointed in the fog of antiquity. But I would observe also that in our Anglo culture, our Anglo way of looking at life, it's even part of our measurement, as it was in the ancient world, by the way. We have 12 inches to the foot, we have the dozen of 12, we have the baker's dozen of 12 plus 1, and we have what the Danes brought back to England when they invaded in the Viking invasions, what they called the long dozen, which is 120. That's still used, by the way, in certain parts of England to measure certain things, especially around York in the north of the, in the east where the Danes settled. But what about the 12 men that wrote the Bible? I've never heard about the 12. There were more than 12 men that were used to pen the Bible, so I'm not sure exactly to what you refer.
Maybe I can just comment a little bit on this, though. Also, you know, the number 12 in the Bible is the fullness, in this case, the fullness of the body. And there's always the number 13 is hidden. For instance, there are 12 apostles, but of course, you know, we have Judas also. There was 13. Paul called himself as an apostle. So there ended up to be 12 plus 1, 13. Also, the Old Testament, when you get into the tribes, the 12 tribes of Israel, there's actually one extra tribe. There's actually 13 tribes. One of the tribes was broken into two. I think it was Dan. I don't remember which one. But in any event, God only always speaks of 12 or lists 12, but there are actually 13. So there's 13 in the Old, 13 in the New, or shall I say 12 in the Old and 12 in the New. So you have the son of perdition that is in there, and that's interesting with the baker's dozen that brings that extra one, comes up into 13. But that seems to be, that 13 is a hidden number in the Bible. The other thing is that you have the 24 elders, 12 and 12, 12 old, 12 new, Old Testament, New Testament brought together. You also have the 144,000 of Revelations, which is 12 times 12 times 1,000, which again, 1,000 is the number of completion. So all these numbers, they have a spiritual significance, and if you study the numbers, you start to see the spiritual pictures that God is really bringing out to us. But as far as people writing the Bible, the author of the Bible is God himself. Holy men of old spake or wrote as God the Holy Spirit moved them. So the author ultimately is God. The secretaries or the writers of the book are prophets that God chose to write the book exactly as he wanted it. So every word is out of his breath. And I believe, if I recall, there were 39 individuals spread across a geographical, pretty large geographical area over, let me see how many years, I think 1,200, no, not even quite that much, maybe about 1,200 years to write the, no, actually going back further than that because Moses, I'd have to figure the numbers, but in any event, a couple of thousand years, 39 individuals wrote 66 books. So I'm pretty sure that's the correct number, 39 people chosen of God to pen the word, and the total books with 66. So that may be what you're looking for.
Yeah, that's wonderful. I really appreciate that from both of you. And then, Brent, speaking about, John was mentioning apathy earlier, and you talk about consciousness rightly informed. How would you go about informing someone's consciousness today when we are so apathetic? And let me tell you, I knew someone who read the Bible beginning to end who was an attorney, and I got to tell you, this individual missed most of the first principles. I mean, just like clear over their head. So how will you do that today with the apathy, if you please? And if you can't answer it now, then another time, just think about it. I appreciate it from you both.
Well, only to help, maybe John could add his ideas on this too, but I've come to the conclusion for myself that it's my job to speak, and it's not my job to make people listen. If Jesus Christ himself couldn't make people listen, I don't think I'm going to. And Jesus Christ put it this way, when he speaks sometimes, if he'd speak the words of God, which he did, of course, sometimes I do, sometimes I don't. That's the difference between me and him. But when I do, I try to remember that God said, let him that have ears hear. Jesus would speak, and then he'd say, let him that have ears hear. Truth is, God hasn't given ears to every man at every time. And when the ears are open, when God opens them, then men hear. And it's our job to speak the truth. And because he's got people out there, he wants to hear. And in any case, when you speak the truth of the law of God, and that's what the will of God, and that's what the revelation of God's all about, when you speak it, it always does its job. It always condemns men to curse, or it blesses them to good. In either case, God gets his will. That's not my decision to make. My job is to speak, to say the truth, to recount the law of God, to be the, as our ancestors and our forebears used to say, the law talker. So we don't want to be afraid of that word law either. So it's not always a matter of it's not my job to perk people up. I can't do that. It's not even possible. If they're not willing to listen, I can't change the will, but I can deliver the message.
Excellent. Okay, thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Okay, thank you, Eric. All right, if anybody else wants to get into the queue, star 6 to get into the queue, we'll take our next questioner is Jeremiah from California. Go right ahead, Jeremiah.
How are you?
Fine.
You can hear me? Good. Brent, it's so nice to hear you guys again. And as well as the last caller, the one that was asking those very good questions. I guess it's hard to live up to that last caller's questions, you see, because the intellectual character of them was so high. Now the bar is way up there, so I will see what I can do. I'm really asking about the effect of what you spoke about earlier, the militia and the Second Amendment, okay, and the right of the people to bear arms, okay? And I have a quote from United States versus Vertigo Urquidez, I'm sorry for the mispronunciation, 494 U.S. 259, and it states, the people seems to have been a term of art employed in select parts of the Constitution. Its use suggests that the people protected by the Fourth Amendment and by the First and Second Amendment, and to whom rights and powers are reserved in the Ninth and Tenth Amendments, refers to a class of persons who are part of a national community or who have otherwise developed sufficient connection with this country to be considered part of that community. And I just wanted to add that in there for everybody that is listening, and get your take on whether or not the Second Amendment actually applies to a private individual or man as opposed to solely to the militia, as it delegates so clearly in the Constitution the power. And so I don't know if let me just read a quick screenshot, and then let's see here. I'm trying to look for relevance. It's not relevant, so if you feel like answering, go ahead, sir. Thanks.
Okay, well, thanks. The Sixth Amendment does apply to the individual. It applies to the individual, and the reason we say that is because without it applying to the individual, there will be no militia that is not infringed upon. Remember this. Rights only apply to individuals. They do not apply to groups. That's a lie that's been foisted upon us, and it continues to be foisted upon us. You read the court cases, you begin to understand that rights, of course, the courts have observed this. It's not that they make it that way. That's just the way it is. And our Supreme Court, of course, in respect of the Second Amendment, have ruled that way and said that in 2008 that the Second Amendment does apply to the individual's right to keep and carry a gun. That was in the Heller decision, which we decided a couple of weeks ago. That was in the year 2008. You can go to the Internet and listen to the arguments. You can listen to the Supreme Court summary when they read their decision. It's instructive. And for those that are interested in the Second Amendment, I highly recommend that you go to the website. I believe the name of it is Justia, J-U-S-T-I-A, and you can, it'll show you there, self-explanatory, how to type in. The year was 2008. The name of the case is D.C. versus Heller. That's the foundational case. That's the first time in the history of our country that our Supreme Court has had opportunity to clearly take the Second Amendment by the nettle and to make the fundamental rulings on it that needed to be made. And they hit the nail on the head and got a lot of things right. But one of the things they got right is that it is indeed an individual right because, again, it is impossible that it could be anything else because there is no other kind of right but an individual right. Corporations don't have the fundamental rights. And I'm speaking of fundamental rights. Corporations don't have fundamental rights. That's why a corporation can't refuse a subpoena to turn over its books and records. Been to court and argued those kind of things. Doesn't work. Can't get away with that. Individuals have that right. And that applies also to the Second Amendment. An association of people, a mere association of people don't have that right. The militia, the several states, don't have that right. It is the individual that has it.
And here it is.
Has said so.
Yeah, I'm looking at Heller now.
Oh, good.
In it reads this. Normal meaning may, of course, include an idiomatic meaning, but it excludes secret or technical meaning that would not have been known to ordinary citizens in the founding generation. And what it's referring to is, of course, the Second Amendment. Further up, it states the Second Amendment provides a well-regulated militia, being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people, lowercase p, to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. In interpreting this text, we are guided by the principle that the Constitution was written to be understood by the voters. Its words and phrases were used in the normal and ordinary and as distinguished from technical meaning. That's from, United States versus Sprague, 282 U.S. 716. But back down to that part where it's talking about the normal meaning may, of course, include an idiomatic meaning. Is this what you're on about? The way that you're describing it sounds like what he's referring to in this article in his dialogue.
He cites a first principle of hermeneutics. That means just the art of interpretation of writings of legal significance, and the Constitution is another one of those writings of legal significance. If the common sense makes sense, take the common sense. That's the first step we should take. Now, sometimes that doesn't always work, but in most all cases, that's where we need to start. If the common sense of the words makes sense, take the common sense. If people would do but that, when it comes to statutes, when it comes to our Constitution of the United States, when it comes to the Bible, for crying out loud. Just do that one thing. let the words, the common sense of the words, make sense to you, and try to show how the Bible make and the Bible, the Constitution, just try to show how it makes sense and not nonsense. How does it fit together? That's, by the way, the definition of, and when it comes to the Bible, that's the definition of theology. It's just a big fancy word, theology. It just means we're going to show how God's law makes sense and not nonsense. We're going to show how it goes together. This does not contradict this. And by the way, it is axiomatic also with the Constitution that it is, as with the Bible, it does not contradict itself. Unlike the IRS code, the IRS code is not even a code. A code, by definition, is something that is consistent within itself. The IRS code is not consistent within itself, but I tell you for sure, from all my looking, man, the Constitution's pretty consistent, and as is our Bible. And our Constitution has woven through it the standard of the militia. You don't just see it in these four militia clauses. It comes up, if you really begin to contemplate the Constitution over long periods of time, the more you think about it, the more you see that the militia is integral to it in its many parts, holds it together. But that's true of all the other weavings of the warp and the woof of our Constitution. They hammered it out. And the reason it goes together so well is not because the fellows that wrote it were so smart. Here's the reason why. Because our Constitution is a brief of common law government that had been hammered out through trial and error over centuries and centuries and centuries. By trial and error. Not by wisdom of men, really. Just by observation of what works and doesn't work. In the nature of things. That is the laws of nature, you see. Our common law.
All right.
Thank you. Also, one last thing is that using containing or denoting expression that are natural to native speakers means is what idiomatic means. So you were right on the money there, and I really appreciate that honest answer. Thank you very much, sir. You're too kind. Thank you so much.
Okay, we're going to take our next question. You want to respond some more to that?
No, thanks, John. Thanks. I said enough, I think.
Okay. All right, our next caller looks like Daniel. You should be unmuted now. Daniel calling in on a VoIP dialer. I think I hear something in the background. Let me try again.
Okay, now it's unmuted.
Okay, there you go. Go right ahead.
Okay, great. Well, I called in about a month ago, and I didn't get a chance to get back. I was busy. They shut my website down. I don't know if it's a technical deal or if it's because I posted an article about Hillary Clinton. They seem to be watching it. SaveAmericaNow.com. So if you go there, it's down. But I still have a court here that's just violating the law. I've subpoenaed police officers to prove that there was false police reports, which I'm in Oregon, that's against Oregon law. I could bring up their code 192 or whatever, and they refused to prosecute the district attorney. So I contacted the attorney general's office, and I'm waiting for a call back from them. And then there's just some other garbage going on with some city police officer being blackmailed because apparently some guy's got pictures of him on cell phone pictures having sex with an underage girl, and he's blackmailing him so he can run drugs in here. And this is a small community, so I've got my family around here, so I want to try to clean it up. It's just sad that I don't really get any support from the community. So that's about it. I just ask people to pray for me if it's God puts that on your heart. And
you should get a committee of safety going.
Right.
Join
well,
with us
I,
on
I
Thursday
good,
and work
lining
to get,
up.
Safe, get committees of safety. I mean, look at, okay. You want to get the constitutional law enforcer here in your county under controlling what needs to be controlled. And over time, you befriend that individual and you give him all the information in order to educate him. Over time, hopefully he's going to transform into a real constitutional officer and start paying more attention to these other things. But right now, the key thing is making a relationship and preparing for the emergency that is coming to America very soon. So that's something you might want to consider doing. Because it's not going to get any better. Every place you go, I don't care what state you go to, I don't care what federal district you go to, it's always the same old problem. And it can't be that these guys are all on the same page without a conspiracy. they're all working off of the 41st Congress, in my opinion, with the Act of 1871, so the Organic Act. Mm. That they're all underneath that. They're working under fiction, and they believe it. You know, we have to let them know it's a fraud. Call them on it.
Okay, and I'm still going to send you the basic overlay of the rights violations that I did take through the court system here, and it, I know it got in, it's floating around the Supreme Court. I think it got on Scalia's desk back in, earlier, about 6 months ago. But I don't know. I know what you're doing is kind of bundling a lot of complaints together, and I don't know if they're going to have an effect. It will if they want to go the way of the constitutional law, but, I mean, we're losing all the good guys.
Each case that we get involved with is a case all on its own. It's really all about due process, habeas corpus, which is a process that's in our courts, and it's an unalienable right to due process. So there's nothing wrong with saying in the Constitution itself, in the Bill of Rights, you have a right to face our accuser. Get your sworn statement, get up here and swear before God, put your hand on that Bible, or swear and get a written statement, sworn before a judge or a magistrate or a notary of all these things against me before you can take any cause of action against me. If you're not going to do that, let me go. It's that simple. You can't hold people without some kind of a sworn affidavit. There's got to be an injured individual that swears out an affidavit. You know, I was watching recently in the evening, I get the dinner, watch a little TV for an hour or so, and I was watching Barney Miller. I remember years ago I used to watch that, and I noticed in the cases how many people come in and decide not to press the charges and let them go. Today they don't do that no more. You know, once the charge is made, they won't even let them go. Even if the person wants to drop the charges or doesn't want to sign the papers, they still continue to try them. It's insane. I don't know, Brent, if you want to comment on any of these things.
Well, I made the same observation. I have friends that are in that position even now. People drop charges, and they continue. I have to conclude, and I've heard and read, that in many of these instances, the money is given for prosecutions. There are so many interests. Monetary, there's much monetary interest from a lot of people in getting people in prison. It pays off to a lot of people. And that's why the prison industry and I call it the criminal law industry. It's an industry in America. And that's why, of course, we jail more people per capita than any country in the world.
All right. Anything else, Daniel?
Well, I just, that's it. I'm just waiting to hear back from the Attorney General to try to get an investigation going on some of the local corruption. And then that's providing the motive for them to just blatantly, you know, violate laws and try to put me in prison. So I'm at the point where I have to plead on the 20th, which is in about a week and a half, on a charge. They've already said they want to try to put me in the prison here for 19 months on something. It's a trumped up charge. So,
right.
But because of the police officer lying and the district attorneys going along with it, I have to take it to trial. This is really, but you know, my faith in people's is shaky because they're just, people are so manipulatable. They think that there's, and I thought this too, that, you know, well, the law's there, so we can depend on the law. But no, we can't. They don't follow the law if they don't follow it. And that's the case in this case at the very beginning. They didn't.
Yeah, they're following something else. And again, you know, I've come to a certain conclusion. You know, look at, I was reading some papers that were preparing for, you know, a case that we're doing. And it was talking about, goodness, what was this? This was in a training manual put out by the Pentagon, okay? And when they were trying to make some examples in American history of people who were terrorists, they called the colonialists that rebelled against the British government, they were terrorists. They called them terrorists in this document that they put together for training for officers. That again came through the Pentagon, and it made me realize, because we have the Organic Act of 1871, which created a government with inside of our government, in our federal city, they actually created a state. They have a governor there in under the District of Columbia in our federal city, Washington, D.C. There's a governor there. And it's a municipality. It's a state. But it's our federal city. That's what it is. But they made it a corporation in 1871, and they made it a state in 1871 in the Organic Act of 1871. And from that point forward, when you tie this idea of what the Pentagon put out, they think they had the right and the authority and the ability to actually just these servants, who the 41st Congress, to actually come out and make this whole new process of law. And it changed the Constitution. It put the idea, and I don't know that it's written this way, but, you know, we have the Constitution for the United States, and from their perspective, it's of the United States. That's from their perspective, and that's how they teach it. And so that changes the whole thing. And their idea of giving rights, they're not unalienable. They're things that the government gives you or the government can take away. And so they ignore the Constitution blatantly.
Right.
I can't believe it. I mean, I've been before judges where I told them, I says, are you overruling the United States Supreme Court? And they would say, oh, no, we're not doing that. But nevertheless, he's going to do it this way. You know, my right to defend myself.
Yes.
As a next friend, by defending my wife ultimately, and I had every right to come in as a next friend. I'm a spouse, and whatever happens to her affects me. Any injury to her is an injury to me. I mean, and this guy really, he just couldn't care less about law. He couldn't care less about unalienable rights. He couldn't care about less of anything, other than whatever he wanted to get through. And all he was doing was working to make sure that the lawyer on the other side. Gets his pay. That's what it was all about. You know, it was really about a credit situation. But look, at they operated under different rules. I'll tell you right now, I'm blown away since I've been in the courts to see how they behave themselves. And they even break their own rules when it's convenient to them because it's a problem and it doesn't work out for them. If it's convenient to them, they'll hold it. If it's not, then they'll change it right there. They just don't care. They're blatant. Unbelievable.
Judge Posner of the Seventh Circuit.
I think he needs what the facts are when objective facts can be presented. Go ahead. Yeah,
can you hear me all right, Daniel?
Yeah, I think there was just there's a delay.
I was just thinking about.
There's a delay. John, He's getting a delay. He's getting a delay. That's why.
Well, I was just going to make a comment about Judge Posner recently said that. He doesn't believe that he's from the Seventh Circuit, Federal Circuit. He doesn't believe that it's worthwhile for anybody, a law student today, to give any time to the Constitution of the United States or the Bill of Rights. Now, I heard another lawyer on the radio not long ago say, you know, lawyers have a responsibility under the Code of Ethics to not criticize judges, but he said, I'm criticizing this judge. He said, what? Why is that man even on the bench? He swore an oath to support and defend the Constitution. Then if he did that, he should be impeached at this point for saying what he said and for promoting the idea. And he has always had a Marxist point of view. I say that. I've read his books. He's a pretty good writer. He's easy to read, and he gets to the point real quick. His cases are enjoyable to read. But with him, everything is, when I say it's Marxist, everything is economic. He evaluates things and thinks all judges ought to evaluate every case on the basis of its economic impact to the majority of persons, which is the doctrine of Karl Marx and Engels. And then he comes up with this idea that the Constitution is a waste of time. Well, he's a leading judge in America, probably the best-known appellate judge in the country on the federal bench. If he's saying that, believe me, there are a whole lot of other judges believing and doing the same thing, and law professors that are doing that, and congressmen, and, of course, presidents. We see the president now is committed to Islamic Sharia law. That's what he's promoting, domination. Domination, that's all it's about. And we are in that situation. I'm sad to hear of your situation, and I appreciate you bringing it up and telling us, and I know it happens that way, and we'll be keeping you in mind. You'd asked us to pray for your situation, and I was going to ask your name, but you then said Daniel. Somebody said Daniel. I think that's it, isn't it? We'll do that.
Yeah, his name is Daniel. All right, anything else, Daniel? We're going to move to the next caller.
Yeah, I'll give up the microphone. The last thing I was going to mention, I'll give up the microphone, was I'm working with a guy named Ed Snook who runs the U.S. Observer that does some good work. They've got people there, and they're working on a shoestring trying to help people that, like, they're in jail and all that, you know, on false charges. So I'm trying to, he's, you know, trying to get this information to him. And so just, that's all. I just, you know, all we can do is all we can do, and that's all we can do, and try not to get too, our head blown up or heart attack about it, you know, and just stay in the spirit, I guess, and try. All we can do is try. So speak the truth. Keep speaking the truth, brothers and sisters. God bless you all.
Thanks.
Good night.
Okay, before we go to the next call, I just want to unmute someone. Terry here from Colorado, I think it is. Are you coming on tonight to speak about, I just unmuted you, Terry. Are you coming on tonight to speak about the ham radios?
If you like.
Okay. All right, we'll just take one more call, and then we're going to move to Terry. Gerard was supposed to be here. I know he called me right before the program, and he ran into an emergency. He didn't know when he'd be back, and he doesn't appear to be here yet. I don't know if the other gentleman that was going to work with Gerard and also with Terry to talk about ham radios. So what we're going to do is just take one more caller, and then we're going to go over to Terry, who's going to talk about ham radios, and then we'll take some questions maybe about ham radios, and we'll see where it goes from there. We're starting a program, though. We don't have the page up, but I think by next Monday we'll have a page up. I've been given a lot of information that we're going to put up a page on ham radios for emergencies. And we're going to do some trial runs on the ham radios in the very near future. Hopefully in the next couple of weeks or so, we're going to actually do maybe a half-hour program or something on the ham radio to learn where to go during an emergency, how to tune in and how it works, and also give people the opportunity and time to purchase a simple ham radio that they can at least listen in on. And some people will want to get more involved. But look, when this emergency comes up, and believe me, it is coming. It's going. It's only a matter of time. You know, chances are electric will go down. Internet will be a problem, of course, with the electric alone. So we're not going to have the communications, but we will continue our meetings on Monday nights over ham radio, and we'll continue that and to continue to collect and assemble and prepare and do whatever we can to get through this tough time that's heading ahead, you know, coming ahead of us here soon. So I'm going to leave you unmuted for right now. So, you know, whatever is in the background will come through, but I'll keep you unmuted for right now, Terry. Let me take one other question, and then we'll move over to Terry. Okay, next caller looks like Ed from California. You've been unmuted, I think. Let's try it again.
Okay, I've been unmuted. Yes.
Okay, there you go. Right ahead, Ed.
All right, thanks. Nice to meet you guys. I wanted to see if you guys could educate me on a little bit. I'm taking courses, though. I have an abduction order just in case, I guess, if I take my kids anywhere. And they're going to actually take it off, or I don't know if they're going to take it off, but we have another court date on that. So I don't know what to do next. I guess she just wanted it just because she had my son. I gave him a cell phone, and
yeah, you're breaking up a little, Ed. Now you're talking about some kind of a problem that you're going to court, maybe concerning your child. Ed,
he's gone. I can't hear him.
Yeah, I don't hear him either. Let me double check to make sure that he's been unmuted, because I still see the check there. Hang on a second. Ed, no, he is unmuted. Ed, can you hear us? And I guess we lost Ed. All right, what I'm going to do is I'm going to clear the queue. And I'm going to go into lecture. Well, we'll leave the queue open for people who want to get into the queue. Thanks a lot, Brent. We're going to move over to our next guest, which is, I think it's Terry from Colorado. Yeah, any final words before we move to Terry, Brent?
No, that's all I've got to say. Thanks a lot, John.
Okay, thank you, Brent. Okay, we're going to go to Brent. I mean, go over to Terry. Now, again, let me just repeat this. We want to prepare for the emergency. We're doing everything we can to educate the people here through National Liberty Alliance. We're doing everything we can to inform, to organize, to communicate, to bring communications together, to get the grassroots moving with the committees of safety, to get the people energized and moving in their own counties as administrations for the grand jury, to work together as the unified United States Common Law Grand Jury, to continue to put the pressure onto the federal courts. And this emergency that's coming up, we're probably going to lose the internet or at least lose electricity. And, you know, I don't see how the internet can stay up if there's no electric. But in any event, we'll lose our communications. We'll lose our ability to meet. So we want to start preparing and planning and testing the ham radio system up. And we'll start using that under emergency conditions to continue to organize and prepare the people from within their own communities to continue to work in their communities to organize and communicate and so that we can also understand what's going on around the country. We can report to each other as we know, because one of the things they will do is cut our communications off. We won't be able to believe anything that we're hearing on the news, but we can report ourselves, and ham radio is definitely a place where we'll be able to get some truth, and we want to participate in that part. So we have a lot to learn. I think we want to look at this from a couple of different perspectives. We'd like Terry to really train us in a simple way, a simple people that can, you know, what's the ABCs and what do we need to do to be able to get connected, listen, and maybe ask a question in some kind of a meeting that we may have going on. And then also to educate those who want to get more involved, maybe to get their own licenses and maybe set up with a much more sophisticated system and so on. So, and again, we're going to get a page up. Hopefully we'll have it up by next Monday. And we'll be talking next Monday about ham radios again. And I'm not sure how many weeks we'll be doing this for, but until we get through this process and get all the information up on the website and then test the system out, and occasionally we will continue to test the system out maybe once a month so that everybody knows where to go when communications goes down. Terry, you should be unmuted. Go right ahead. You were coming in a little low, so you might want to get a little closer to your mic. But go ahead, Terry.
Okay, is that any better?
Can you crank it up some more? I can barely hear you.
Yeah, if you can make it a little louder.
Okay, how about that?
Can you turn up just a little more or get a little closer?
I can't turn it up. Let's see. That's about all I got, John, right there.
Okay, well, let's go with that. Go right ahead. We can kind of hear you, so go ahead.
Oh, boy. I didn't know my phone was having so many problems. Communication between geographically separated people is rather difficult at times. We've used smoke signals, and we've used mirrors, and we've used a lot of other things over the course of history. And then when radio came along, that gave us an opportunity to enable that communication. And it's not just hams, but it's everybody who uses radio, and that's just about anybody, because anybody with a cell phone is using radio communications. It has many uses. Anywhere you need information, ham radio may be able to get the message through, and that's the important part, is getting the message through. But it's more than that. Once you have a reliable communications link, you can use it to affect change, and I think that's where it's applicable here. We have to use that radio the right way, and hams enable that. A ham radio operator is the only person in the United States that can design, build, and operate a radio without any interference from the FCC. They have to obey the rules and not interfere with anybody, but that's based upon the idea that what you do here, because the radio wave can travel across the entire globe, the entire planet, you need to cooperate and have some kind of idea about what you can do and you can't do when you're a ham, when you're an amateur radio operator. the Amateur Radio Service, which is its technical name or its official name, demonstrates the essence, I think, of what needs to be done in L.A. If you think about it, it is an individual effort to succeed. It takes some effort to succeed. We build on the work of others. Execution of our mission to communicate helps others. It takes each individual to know what to do, but it takes at least two people to receive a message or to process a message, communicate a message. And it's fun. There's order in things, like I was talking about, all over the world. If I'm transmitting here and somebody is getting interfered with across the other side of the globe, well, that's an issue that's going to be taken up at some point somewhere. So to take you from the simple, like you suggested, John, to the complex, it comes down to one test. One test will allow you to get on the air. It's a 35-question test. It's all multiple choice. And the entire question pool is in the back of a book called Ham Radio License Manual that the AARRL puts out. And there's others out there. You know, it doesn't matter what you use as long as you can answer 26 questions right on that test. You can get your license and be on the air. The entire question pool is in the back of the book. All answers to all questions are in the question pool in the back of the book. And if you pass the test, you receive your license and a call sign. My call sign is KI0RE, Kilo India Zero Romeo Echo. That call sign is unique throughout the entire world, so that when somebody hears my call sign, they know where it's coming from. And that's pretty much it. Is there a lot of different things to do? Yes, there are a lot of different aspects to this hobby. Satellites, moon bounce, there's bizarre stuff, but the all is to see if you can use your knowledge of radio to do something that's fun, useful, and get somebody, help somebody and provides a good service. What do you need? You just need a radio. You need a transceiver and that license and that call sign. Then nobody's going to bother you. It does take some study. There are people that can help you. In ham radio, we call them ELMers. Those people are already conducting local classes. You can go up on the ARRL website and find out where your local class is. Those people are ready to give you the test. I will be here. I hope to start a regular time when we can call in and ask questions, and I try to answer them. Maybe I can teach a little bit here. It would be difficult, but if everybody's on the same page in the book, we can do that. So nobody knows it all, especially me, and I welcome any hams that want to contact me. My information is Terry Moore up on the NLA website. Anybody is welcome to contact me in any way they choose. I'm KI0RE. You can look that up on the net, and you'll find out lots of things that I've done. So what do we need? We need to get an idea and get a license of what this all takes and how we need to get there. It does take a little effort, but it's worth the effort. And how does that apply to committees of safety? Well, if your committee of safety is dispersed, you can still conduct business. That might be an advantage in certain times and certain situations. So it goes
well,
on.
Let me ask a question or make a few sure. points to tell me if it's true or false. But you know how, because what we need to do is handle this for emergency services. Now we have we know that when we set up these committees of safeties, once people start getting the word out and they discover some people that are ham operators and they bring the committee of safety to the ham operator, I'm sure any ham operator within that county will jump right into getting connected with the Committee of Safety to work with them for the purpose of communications, or someone in the county eventually would get a license, at least one individual. But here's what we're thinking. Okay, most people want to be informed to get information. Most people will be listeners and not necessary participants. And for that purpose, we got thousands of members with National Liberty Alliance. And, we need to be able to communicate with all of those people that need to get that communications during the time of an emergency. So during that emergency, right now, if we do something in a couple of weeks over the radio, everyone should be able to tune in and listen. And that's the key, to prepare people and give them the necessary information to be able to purchase something, at a reasonable price that they can afford, where they can tune in and listen. And we also want to start, given time, we want to put this in the plans. We'll write a paper on this for the Committee of Safety. We have on the Committee of Safety a chair that's called the Committee of Correspondence. Every Committee of Safety has a Committee of Correspondence chair. And that individual is responsible to communicate information to the public, to the general public, to communicate information to another Committee of Safety next door or across the state or even across the nation. It's connecting. The Committee of Correspondence is connecting all the Committees of Safeties together. That's their job. That's their purpose. And those individuals might come in, that therefore we'll have people, if we can get Committees of Safeties in most counties, during an emergency at any given time when something happens in a particular area, in a county where a Committee of Safety, the correspondence person with the correspondence would then be able to pass that information along at a national meeting that we would continue to have, probably continue on Mondays at 9 o'clock, and it would then be on ham radio instead of on the Internet. Then that's kind of the plan we're looking to do. And we do know that certain people will need licenses. The people who are operating and running the program will need licenses. Is my thinking correct so far that this could be used in this fashion? I mean, we don't want to burden the people who don't have the time or aren't interested, but do want to listen and know what's going on.
Absolutely. And the only overriding thing I can say there is that that's called shortwave listening. To reach everybody, we have to either use the Internet, but that we kind of want to cut that out because the Internet could be controlled and gone, and they can't control the airwaves. So we want to be able to send the message out, and it would be between a couple of hams. However, everybody could listen in on what the message was, and all that requires is a radio that receives on the frequencies that we would use. And I would recommend one of the later model radios, maybe a digital one, so that you can read the frequency you're on precisely, because the gear has gotten much better over the last 20, 30 years. And the old stuff, you kind of knew about where you were, and you had to tune it up and find it. We need to go right to the frequency and not lose any time. So, yes, that can be done, and you can go down to your local ham store, or you can go up on the net and look for a small radio and that you can get that will cover the ham bands. And as long as they cover the
ham
bands.
What kind of price ranges would that be, low
anywhere,
to high? I think low
would be $50 or $100 that you find at your local ham fest or a garage sale. But it can go as high as $700-$800 just for a nice rig that you can listen to.
Okay, and one of the key things we would probably, again, this is why the Committee of Safety is going to have so much work to be able to do and needs to do. We need to communicate and understand what's going on the other side of the country during an emergency. So that's why these Committees of Safety is so important, but not just only for that. But also, of course, the Committees of Safety is for their own personal safety within their counties so that they are really under constitutional authority and not under some kind of martial authority, which is military authority ultimately. That's what martial law is all about, military control. The president loses that control, and it's totally under the military. But the people in each county. Again, if we have a committee of correspondents, and even if the individual who is the chair of the committee of correspondents, they may not necessarily be a ham operator. But, of course, the person who would be in the county that is a ham operator, and I know they should be easy to connect with those people and get them into interested in what we're doing here at National Liberty Alliance and what we're planning to do. I know they jump at this opportunity. But they would work with, they would be sitting on the chair, with the chair for the Committee of Correspondence, and they would be the ones reporting, and people within the county would be reporting, and they'd get meeting together, and what kind of information do we want to get out there to the rest of the nation, and so that when we come together, you know, we have a potential of 3,133 committees of safety. I mean, that's the maximum if every county were to establish one. Some areas are so rural they may not have them at all, especially in Alaska. There's quite a few counties up there that there may be a couple of people in each county. But and there are other places, too, like that. But generally speaking, 3,000 roughly. Maybe if we can get that many, that would be fantastic. But at least we'd be able to know what's going on. And we'd also be able to give assistance to each other. When we see that a problem is taking place in a county, other counties around could come to their aid. Sheriffs can get together. And we do know here in New York, the fire departments, a lot of the fire departments throughout the county are all connected to some kind of a communications other than the trunk. They also are working into the HAM system, I believe. I'm speaking without too much knowledge. I know Gerard was speaking a little bit about that, and I don't know what knowledge you have about that, Terry. But anyway, that's what I'm kind of thinking, and this is why this is going to be so important.
Yeah, and a lot of what you're talking about is done every day, but people don't have the radios to listen in and hear what's going on. But it's possible. You'll have to modify things just a little bit. It won't be exactly like what you're thinking, but this is something that's doable. And you're right. I think hams in every county would jump on the opportunity to do something of value like this.
All right. Anything else you think you might want to mention, or do you want to take questions from people?
I'll try questions. I don't think I have anything else that I had planned.
Okay. All right. And what we're going to do is, like I said, we're going to get a page up, and we'll try to get it up during this week. I don't see why we can't. We do have some information and some thoughts and ideas on different radios, depending on what level that you really people want to get involved with. Some people will be just happy as listeners, but again, some people will want to be more sophisticated. But we do need an individual in every county that can connect and have a license and understand how things work and be able to operate in a smoother way during an emergency system, an emergency situation. But we're going to get that information, a page on that, as soon as possible. And as soon as we can, once we feel we're ready, we'll try to test something out and maybe get on there for a half hour or so and see once how things work, and so people will know where to find us during the emergency. When things go down, there'll be a station that people will be able to tune into, and there'll be a particular time that we will be on the air, and it may be more than once a week. Matter of fact, I would imagine during an emergency, we'll probably be on every day, maybe for an hour or something. I don't know. We'll have to communicate with people with the knowledge of how these things work, and also get together with the leadership and others that have more expertise in these areas, at least than I do, because I have no expertise at all here. But to try to understand what we need to be thinking about, and, you know, even if we come on once an evening, every evening, even for 10 or 15 minutes, and that's it. But if we have something, the whole hour. But again, during an emergency situation, I can't imagine that we wouldn't be able to fill an hour every night easily. But again, we're going to have to figure that plan out. Okay, so let me, I see Crystal from Connecticut. Do you have a question? I'm going to take questions only concerning ham radios, and when we run out of those questions, then we'll move into general questions. So let's go to the first person, which is Crystal. Do you have any questions or comments concerning communications during the emergency?
Yeah, okay, this is what I did. I contacted, I got a number for The View, on TV. So and I put it out there, and I spoke to three of the TV stations about the National Liberty Alliance. I will call you and give you the numbers, the direct numbers.
Okay. And if you can't get me, get a hold of Jan, because Jan can hunt me down, or Gary. Okay.
Yeah, because we're going to try to set up TV interviews, because they all want to hear it. And Joy from The View, oh my gosh, it was explosive today. So there's a lot of good things that definitely National Liberty Alliance that, you know. And I also met a lady tonight, and she had a good friend who is a sheriff that was sworn in. And I was giving her the information, so she's supposed to be on the line listening, and I got her number. So I will get the information, so, and I will make sure that sheriff here will get on the line. That's what I wanted to tell you. But I'm
okay.
Trying to get to you. No, I've been contacting the TV media for you. Okay.
All right, we appreciate it. Let's try to talk tomorrow or the next day, whatever you can. And
okay, yeah,
again,
because
if you can't get me, get Jan or get Gary, and they'll find
me.
Wait a
minute, so I got Jan, so Gary's number. Okay, all righty.
Yeah, both of them up on our website under directory. You get their numbers up there. Okay?
All right. Have a good night.
Thank you, Crystal.
You're welcome. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Okay, Tim from Michigan, do you have a question for Terry concerning ham radios or a comment or something?
Yes, I do, John. This is Tim from Michigan. I was just hoping Terry could tell us what the frequencies are that are included in the ham band for listening.
Yeah, what they did was they took slices of the entire radio spectrum. So there's different places on 80 meters, 160 meters, 40 meters, 10 meters, on up to VHF, UHF, and even above that. And there's slices that are dedicated for amateur radio. And the reason they did that was that each one of those frequencies in the entire radio frequency spectrum have different properties that do different things and are useful in this communication but not so good in that communication. And so hams are allowed to use all of those different ones once they get to a point. Right now, if you take the tech test, you would have VHF and UHF privileges, everything above 144 megahertz. So it depends, and could I give you the frequencies right off the top of my head? I can tell you some of them, but that information is available on the internet quite easily for anybody who wants to know. Does that answer your question?
Yeah, for now, that's good, Terry. Thank you. I yield.
Okay, thank you, Tim. And you know, this book, as you were talking, Terry, about a book that we can get to learn, and then in the back they have some questions, and the test will be a percentage, I guess 60 or so of those questions on that test, I think you said, or something like that. Maybe you can make that a little clearer. But that book, we should be able to get a copy of that electronically and post it up as a PDF download on our website, correct?
I don't think you can get it electronically. The one that I've normally gone back to because it's been so good at teaching costs about $30, and it's available at ARRL.org.
I'll get that information from you if you haven't already given it to me. I know you've given some information,
I think,
to Jan. Yeah, and he's given it to me, but I haven't went through it yet. But is that information in that information concerning where to buy that book? Okay.
Yes.
Now, even that's not the only book available, I presume. I presume for people who don't want to spend the $30 or can't spend the $30, they'll be able to probably download something in a PDF form from somewhere, right? I'm sure if we Google something, we'll find it.
And I don't know where those are at right now.
Okay.
But you're right.
I'm sure I'll be able to find them once I look a little bit into this and see what I need to Google to find these things. So, okay. Let's take our next person. Let's see. It's Rhonda from Washington. You got the mic. Go ahead, Rhonda.
Hi, Terry. I have a question regarding these little Biofang handheld radios. I know that you can use those within a certain distance, and they are so also repeatable.
Yeah.
Are those good enough for somebody that's listening?
Yes, they're good enough if who you are talking to is using the same radio on the same frequency. I assume you're talking about the family radio service and the general radio service, which are often combined. And you see a radio, I think there's only like seven frequencies that the FRS uses, the family radio service. Those are on discrete frequencies that are outside the hand band. And it's another place where they said, okay, you can use this. You don't have to know anything. You don't have to be a ham to use these. And, yeah, they're usable. And, yes, you can use some. You can use repeaters that are made for those frequencies. They're not the ham bands. Will they work? Yes, to an extent. But once you get on ham radio, you'll understand why it's to an extent.
Okay. Okay, that's different than what my understanding of this thing was. With my understanding that you could use it as a handheld ham and could get a ham license and get more frequencies to add to what this is available to do.
Yeah, if you a ham license, you do have a much wider range of gear that you can use, a much wider set of radios that you can use on a much wider set of bands than the family radio service or the general radio service.
Okay. Okay. Thank you.
Okay. You're welcome.
Okay. Thank you, Rhonda. All right. Let's take our next caller, Ali from Colorado. Go right ahead, Ali.
Hello, Terry. Hey, Terry. Good question. What is the procedures like, say, for a natural disaster like a flood? How does the ham radio network get set up? And then what would you envision if we did lose the grid? What grid, what the network would be set up?
Well, there's several things here. You've asked a very broad question.
Yeah.
So I'll do with it as I please. There are people who practice. As a matter of fact, we're having a fire incident over here in Nederland, which is just about 20 miles west of Boulder. It started over the weekend, and it went on today through today, and it's still going on. And they're trying to hold the fire back. It's 0% contained yet. The territory is very rugged. Well, there's been hams all day communicating traffic back and forth that they don't want to send over the official radios that the authorities have. And some of that traffic is health and welfare, and other of it is what can we do here? Can we send this camera over here? Because I want to get a look at what that looks like right now. Hams provide a way to do that. And there's a few organization. I'll just mention a couple, and that is ARES, and there's others that are organized already, and they practice a bunch of skills. So that's, we could tailor it to the NLA's need, or those organizations might want to join with us. I don't know yet, because I just got started in this just a week ago. So what can be done? There's already organizations. Some of them might dovetail and fit well with what we need. Some of them might not. But there's nets all over the United States, all over the world, that go on every day that you just need to know the time and the frequency, and you can listen in, and if you're a ham, you can actually participate in. Does that answer your question, Ollie?
Yeah. The last part is, what would you envision if the grid go down? I know the hams probably have, a plan set up and whatever, but what would you envision would happen? How would it be set up if we did lose the grid?
Well, let me jump into this one a little bit, because I have generally an idea on how we can work this out, and of course, Terry can comment on how logical or whatever this might be. But look, we want to build. This is why it's so important to build the committees of safety. And let me tell you something. Everybody that's listening to my voice right now, don't think the other guy's going to do it. Every person listening, every person that's listening on the audio after our meeting tonight, or those who are listening live, you got to get involved in your own state. Connect with each other. Come on this next Thursday night meeting, and let's make a connection. Get connected with the leaders. We're going to lay out a. We have of course zones. We've broken the nation up into six zones. So we're going to start off with the national leaders of the six zones, and work down into those states and down into the federal districts. And start to work out and organize really getting initiated in every single county, working in every state to get these committees of safety. Now, one of the first order of business is the committee of safety is to form the organization. You need a chairman, you need a co-chairman, you need a secretary, a treasurer, and you need a chairman for the committee of correspondence, which is part of the committee of safety. Now, the person who is in charge of the Committee of Correspondence will be the person responsible to seek out and find someone within the county that's willing to work with the Committee of Safety, especially during an emergency for the purpose of communications. But they need to become a member of the Committee of Safety to come to the meetings. They need to really appreciate and understand the seriousness and the need for what we're doing in America here today with this system we're trying to set up. We're going to put together a book, a booklet, or a piece of, you know, we'll have this information on a page, but we'll have a place where people can go, and it'll be a directory, just like we have on National Liberty Alliance right now. If you go up to National Liberty Alliance, you see our directory. Well, under our directory, we'll have something for the ham radio directory, and you'll be able to go out there and see the people that are signing up in the committees of safeties within the certain counties, and we'll list them out by counties. But we'll also produce a book, a PDF, and we'll update that maybe on a weekly basis. So when things go down, people should have a copy of that, an updated copy of the that list of individuals and the call numbers and all that information. But we'll also put the information of what time we'll come on for the national purposes. And probably every evening during an emergency we'd come on to give the latest news, what's going on. And again, people within the county would be reporting to the committee, would be reporting to the committee, the committee of correspondence, which would be reporting, of course, with and to the person who is running the ham, and who would then be able to get their time in to give the report of what's going on in the county and whatever vital information that needs to get out there on a national level. And so we're going to try to set this up as sophisticated as we can, but it's really going to be simply a list, a directory. And does that sound feasible, Terry, on a way to try to organize the nation?
Yeah, that sounds feasible. There's a lot of details that aren't in there, and the devil will be in the details. But I want to say, on a more individual level, I want to say 12 volts. Almost all ham gear is set up to run on 12 volts, except for the really big, powerful machines that try to reach the moon or whatever.
So a regular car battery.
A regular car battery. So a regular car battery, well, you charge it up when you have the sun, and you use it all night if you have to, but most
right.
car batteries drive a radio.
So we
got to
set
long.
That information up and lay that out and offer people maybe some places where they can go and buy something that's reasonable and what they need to be looking for to buy, and people will buy at whatever levels they want to buy. But this is something, this is as important as making sure that you have food and silver. I mean, goodness, and water, making sure that you're in a safe place. I mean, all of these things are necessary. Communications is part of this. So what we'll do is I'm going to draw up a paper. Maybe I can get someone in one of our committees to really draw something up, but if not, I'll draw it up and put the basics together. And then I'll get it to you, Terry, where you'll then fill in the details that I missed, and so that we can really make a viable plan and impose a necessary directory. We're going to start as soon as possible. I don't know when this will be, but hopefully within weeks to a month, we're going to start testing the system and spend a little time just to get small messages out. Gerard was talking about potentially running our program over ham. I don't know how often you got to come in and put certain information or how long you can run. What's the rules on that? I mean, we got a 3-hour program. What would be the rules if you wanted to try to send it out?
The rule is either easy to remember. It's at every 10 and at the end. So every 10 minutes, you have to identify your station that's sending out this information. And you have to listen and make sure that nobody wants to cut in. And then at the end of your communication, when you're done, you have to identify yourself. And so that puts in a little chink on it. But
well, maybe during our program, we can put someone in charge of that and break in every 10 minutes to, what does it take, 10 seconds, 20 seconds to make that?
Each ham that would relay the information on whatever frequency they're going to do, they would be carrying third-party traffic, and they would put that call sign in there and break it for just a second and then carry on.
Okay, so we'll have to put this together and figure this out, how this works. And this, again, also by getting this out on ham right now, in the next couple of weeks or whatever, just to be able to broadcast and for people to be able to go on ham and, you know, we'd give them the information.
Right now. Hold on a second. You can't use the word broadcast. Broadcast
okay.
is what the TV stations and radios do. They expect no one to come back to them. We are transmitting. And when we unkey our transmitter, we receive information so that it's a two-way conversation. We cannot broadcast, but we can certainly transmit to particular hams and then have them, you know, answer back.
And so we're transmitting every 10 minutes, per se? You know, we have to let loose every 10 minutes and then transmit again?
Let loose every 10 minutes, that's right. And any other ham, what you're doing is you're giving a break for anybody else to use the frequency. You're trying to cooperate. And when you think about it, that's a good idea. If I had somebody out and I just kept talking, there's nobody else who can come in and say, turn left. I wanted you to turn left 5 minutes ago, but you kept talking. Mm-hmm. So,
all right. Well, you know the nature of our programming and what we're doing, and we go through teaching and different things. But we'll see how we can possibly figure this out so that we can make a plan and – And then also this would be also getting out to people that wouldn't normally find us and get more people involved in what we're doing. Again, we're reaching towards that critical mass, and this is also not only something that will benefit us, all of us at National Liberty Alliance and all the people that are working together, even in our own communities to, you know, save this nation. It benefits all of us. But it also tries to bring us closer to that critical mass, and the critical mass is what we need to really accomplish our goal.
Not only that, John, I agree with all of that, but if you pick your frequencies right, you'll have people listening in from around the world listening to what you're doing here, and they'll say, I like that.
Okay, so let's start talking about that during the week. You know, Gerard's the one that really needs to be communicating because he has some knowledge, but I need to be involved in this also, and we need to make a plan. So let's get communicating on that kind of a plan. All right, you want to take some more questions?
If you like, whatever you want to do, John.
Okay. All right, let's go to our next person here, 720. You got a question or a comment concerning Ham here or for Terry?
You're Ray Suazo. I'm Ray Suazo.
What's your first name in your state? I'm sorry.
Ray Suazo, Southern Colorado, Antonito, native.
Okay.
And County of Conejos, Mike Giron, friend.
Question?
I'd like to join.
To join what? National Liberty Alliance?
Yeah.
Well, go to nationallibertyalliance.org, and if you want to become a member, just click the Join Up button and, you know, become a member and start taking our free courses and learning what's going on. Of course, we have these Monday night calls every Monday at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time till midnight, so And we have Thursday calls for the purpose of organizing, 9 p.m., again, the same room here. And we got lots of committees working, you know, get involved with a committee. You know, one of the things is once we get this new welcoming message up, the special welcoming message, which you'll find under the welcome tab, that should really, you know, orient people to what we're doing, prepare them and give them a good overall understanding.
Sounds good.
Okay. Any other questions or comments?
No, I'm good.
Okay, thank you. Okay, let's go to Richard from Virginia. We'll go right ahead, Richard. Richard from Virginia? Let me double check to make sure you've been unmuted. Let's try it now. Richard from Virginia. Can you hear? Try speaking, Richard. At least that's what it says. It's 434 number from Virginia.
That should be what? Richard. I talked to him earlier this week.
It was at 4204, it looks like.
Right.
He's unmuted. Maybe he walked away. All right, let's leave him unmuted for right now. We'll go to Fred from California. Fred, go right ahead, Fred.
I have a question about the ham radio system. I know the frequency allocations are bizarre. Is there a frequency allocated to digital communications? Like if I had an inverter for my computer to generate AC power from a battery, is there an attachment I can plug into my computer and digitally communicate?
Absolutely. And you're actually allowed to use it just about anywhere.
It require a license?
Yes. If you're going to do it in the ham bands, it requires a license. If you're going
to
do
but
it
not
in
to listen, though, right?
Not to listen, no.
Right.
But you can do that. There's even software, programmable radios that will do anything that you can envision and make it do and program it to do.
How do you set up an antenna on that? How does that work? Do you have to get some kind of an apparatus that you put into the USB or something to set up an antenna or something?
Well, you usually have a little box that does some of the I have gray hairs, John. I'm getting older. But you have to have an antenna. You have to have a box that's listening on the radio frequencies, and the antenna goes to that box, and then coming out of the box is a... something that can talk to the computer. So you have to have a box that goes from radio signals to computer signals and back the other way from computer signals to radio signals. That used to be called a TNC, but there's actually digital mobile radio and D-Stars that are completely digital radios that communicate with each other digitally, and they communicate text and the voice all at the same time. And I'm just getting started in that. So I can't say much about it, but it's quite interesting what it does. Does that answer your question?
Part of it. I have another question. Let's say that I wanted a longer antenna for reception. Couldn't I just take a fishing pole with some kind of wire and throw it over a tree and tie it to the antenna and get a lot more reception?
Yes, but there's certain physical rules, and that's the nice thing about ham radio. Thanks for asking that question. That's excellent. The study of ham radio and radio in general is the study of physics and nature's law. It's kind of the other side of what we're doing in the NLA. And you have to follow those laws. There are principles in radio that work. So it depends upon, you can hang a random wire, and they call it a random wire antenna. and it will pick up all kinds of things. But if you cut that antenna and load it up a certain way with circuits, you can tune it to where it gets a particular frequency or a particular frequency band much better than all the other bands, which kind of gives you a step forward because you're eliminating some of the noise out there when you do that. So
you're talking about dipole theory and attenuation and clipping the antenna to a length.
Yeah, that is somewhat, yes.
Okay, that's what I thought. But for other people out there, what it means is when you got that long wire, you just kind of clip it, maybe a quarter of an inch at a time until the frequency you want really blasts.
Or you sit down and compute a formula and then use a coil and a capacitor to tune it up and load it up to the frequency you want. It can be done either way. If you just have a random wire or a dipole antenna, you're right. You have to kind of clip it down a little bit until you get it where you want it on the frequency you want. But can any wire receive any signal to a large extent? Yes.
And what kind of interference do you get, like from telephone poles carrying AC voltage? Do you want to be parallel or do you want to be 90 degrees from it?
You're getting into a lot of particulars that I can explain.
These are very simple things that people don't know unless they realize
it. You're right, but not everybody wants to learn that right now.
What I understand,
sir. To introduce the idea of ham radio. You're welcome to call me any time, and I can talk about that till I'm blue in the face. But for right now, I think we need to stay on the general topics. Is it possible to do what you're talking about? Is it better to cross it rather than lay it parallel so that you don't have a lot of crosstalk? Absolutely. That's true. But there's a lot more involved than just that.
Yes, sir, I know there is. And I'm not trying to complicate the issues. I'm merely trying to generalize the simplicity of common sense.
Yes. Thank you.
Okay. Thanks a lot, Fred. Let's see if we can get back to Richard from Virginia. You're still unmuted, Richard.
Yeah, can you hear me now?
Go right ahead.
All right. This is for Terry. I went on Amazon where I'd buy a lot of books, and they have four books listed from the ARRL. One is a ham radio license manual with a red color. Another one is a general class license manual with a more overall blue color. And then ham radio license manual with a CD.
Yeah, and, okay. You're doing is you're going up through different levels of what a ham license is. What you want to get is the red one from 2014 that covers the question pool that is good through 2018. June 2018, this question pool expires, and they will have another one ready at that time. And
so the ham radio license manual, the red one, is a starter.
Right, it's technician manual. It's for technician. If you look way down at the bottom, there's some check marks, and it says level 1 technician, level 2 general, level 3 amateur extra, and you want the one with the check mark and the level 1 technician. Bob.
Okay. Because you said $30. I think the most expensive one I'm seeing is $25.
Great. You're doing better than I did.
Okay, because I was also on the ARRL site. I got both my computer and my iPad going, and I wasn't quite finding. They got a bunch of books listed, but not exactly the same as what Amazon's got.
True.
Okay, thank you. That's all.
You're welcome. Thank you. Good question.
Okay, let's take our next caller. Let me see. Let's try 773. What's your first name and your state?
Ray from Chicago.
Okay, go right ahead, Ray.
I've got a question, and it is, are laws really going to matter if crap hits the fan?
I'm sorry, I didn't hear that.
Are radio laws really going to matter if everything goes to H?
Yes. Yes and no. Okay, I think I see what you're saying. If there is no government, or if the government is in a position to make it difficult, do you have to follow what the rules are right now in Part 97? Probably best if you do. It's kind of like driving a car. Is it better to stop at a red light or go at a red light? And I ask that rhetorically. Everybody kind of follows the same rules, and everybody's a lot happier. As soon as you start doing things outside of what is has been accepted, what's been agreed upon, this is something that's coordinated over the entire planet. KI0RE, my call sign, I'm the only one that can use that call sign. That's so they know where it's coming from. If you play by the rules, everybody drives on the right side, not the left side, or vice versa in some other countries, it's important that we have some working rules or principles that allow us to de-conflict ourselves with everybody else. And when we do, then we all get a better use of the available bandwidth. Because there's only a certain so much bandwidth out there that can be used. Does that answer your question?
Not really, because I don't think everybody's going to be driving on the right side of the lane if.
Well, generally, I think what your question concerns is, do you need a license to really participate in an emergency? And the answer to that is no. During these times right now, of course, we'll need them, or we should get them. But not everybody needs to do that if they're going to be listeners. But the key thing is everybody does want to follow some kind of rules, otherwise you got some chaos. And look, it's just like, what do they call those radios, the CB radios? I remember back in the 70s and even the 80s, it was very, very popular. And, of course, the truckers used that all the time. But I know where I was, it was kind of popular. Everybody was getting those CB radios. And everybody just kind of slid into the way things worked, you know, and they copied each other in protocol. And so that's going to be pretty much the same thing. People will have to follow the protocol. And as you're listening, you'll pick up protocol. And we'll continue, you know, it'll work that way. That's fine. But generally speaking, are you going to need a license to an emergency? Absolutely not. Are you going to fall into protocol? I think it's the nature of people to try to, you know, keep chaos out of the system.
I'd like to say one thing, and that is that the rule exists in Part 97 that if life or property is threatened, anybody can pick up a ham radio and use it. Period. And that's the way the law is written right now. So if you feel that your life or your property is threatened, you can grab a radio from your buddy who just fell off a cliff and ask for help. You can use that radio for that purpose, even though you don't have a license.
Good answer.
Okay, does that
okay, let's take our next caller. Are you done there, Ray?
Yes, I am.
Okay. All right, there was a next caller in there. They're gone now, so let me just click the next button there. We'll kind of open if anybody wants to get into the queue.
Yeah, I have a quick question. I see that, like, for this Baofeng or whatever they call it, little cheap radio, they do have USB cables available, and they have a little CD for software that goes with them. Is that used just for control of the radio, or does it allow you to use the computer to listen and control the radio?
Most of them, most of them like that are to help program the radio. Some of these radios have 400 and 500 memories that you can put all kinds of information in for repeaters, different repeaters, different modes of operation, and all kinds of things. So I've had radios where I had all the repeaters around the state and then all the repeaters again around the state, only with alternate side tones and things like that, because when it comes to a weather situation, like a tornado or something, they often change the side tones so that they don't hear anything but the people who are actually out doing the spotting. So most of those are so that you can easily plug it into a computer and load up. So I can take your radio and download your program and I say, I like the way you got your setup. And then I can plug that into my radio on the same computer and upload it to my radio. And now I have all the frequencies and all the memories that you have. So my radio is set up just like yours. And so when you say, let's go to memory number 7, then I jump over to memory number 7. You and I know what frequency we're on, but nobody else does. They have to go looking for it. So, yes, most of those are to program the radio.
Yep. Okay. Thanks.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Okay. If anybody else has a question or a comment, star 6 to get into the queue. And we don't have anybody in the queue at the moment, so anybody wants to join. And, okay, Jan from Kansas, go right ahead. What's your question or your comment? Well, we lost Jan from, I don't know what happened. Okay, let's go for Peter from New York. Well, lost Peter from New York. Get back into the queue. I don't know whether I hit the button or what. Wonderand.
Hello.
South Carolina. Go right ahead, Wonderand.
Hey, John, this is great you're talking about. Can you hear me? This is great you're talking about ham radio, because I'm taking the test on August 9th here in Spartanburg. 2 points, because my battery might die. One, I tried the book. This man's got great ideas. Tried the book. I've tried to go on and take all those little tests that they tell you to do. What I found this time is I'm doing hamonline.com, because what it does, for some people, they can only do sound bites. This hamonline.com, it has a fee, but it's like the cost of a book. And then you get discouraged because you're not doing it. Where hamonline is feeding you sound bits, it tests you on your on what you've got. You can go back and forth, and it's been so much saner for me. The other thing is, in your towns, you have the different ham radio clubs. Go and talk to them. See if you can become an assistant. Do whatever's necessary. I'm about losing my phone. These are just some ideas, but I'm so excited about taking my exam, and I love it that you're going to do it, but I'm sorry, I didn't get your name. You cannot broadcast. You can only transmit. And I'm like, you can't broadcast, I'm saying to the phone. So you can only transmit. I'm learning. I'm very much a beginner. But there is an easier way and a faster way for those people. I think the book's anywhere from $15 to $25. Taking the course at hamonline.com is $24. So I think it expedited and make it easier and saner for a lot of people in a shorter period of time. But there are ham clubs.
I agree. We should try. You can go up to ARRL.org, and many ham clubs are listed up there. You might be able to find ham clubs in your local area. And nothing beats having what's called an Elmer. That's a mentor who's a ham and will mentor you to learn ham radio. Everybody learns different. Some people do it by the book. Some people do it online like you're doing. and other people, they have to have somebody telling them something. So they keep going to the club and talking to a particular Elmer until they get it. All of these are valid ways, and I think you're absolutely right. For different people, it's different ways, and I'm here to be a resource more than I am to teach everybody about ham radio, because I know that it can't be done.
And I think even with ham online, with the fact of the emergencies that we're all really knowing we're facing, ham online may do a special thing if there's two or three people from a town or an area that are willing to work together. They're very nice people to work with. They're holding my hand because I'm doing three tests on August 9th, the tech, the general, and the extra. And I want to pass every one of them, absolutely. And I'm doing 3 and 4 hours a day of studying for those three tests. They all overlap each other, so they're all helping me. So my point that I want to make is that none of us are stupid. We can learn, as you said, at the rate, the time, and the energy we can. An hour and a half a day will get you through this, and it depends upon your club. Our club does it the even months. Greenville does it the odd month, so it depends upon your club.
You said that was hamonline.com, right?
Correct.
Okay, because we'll look into that, and we'll get that information up on the webpage when we put it together on Ham Radio, okay?
Yeah.
Thank you. Appreciate that. Okay. That sounds like the way to go for a lot of people, so...
Yeah, it's faster, it's smoother, and they're very nice people. And if we tell them what it's for and what your community is, they're very the thing about ham radio operators, I have a mentor, what he's talking about. I've had a mentor for almost four years. He's seen me go to electronics school. He's seen me graduate. He's seen me go through this, and he's saying, so when are you taking the test? I said, I'll take it in August. But I'm not telling them I'm taking three of them. Because if I disappoint them, I don't want to disappoint them. I want to be proud of what I can do.
Right.
And that's what each of us can do. He stuck by me. So, and the other people in the club thought I was just a boobily. But I'm not a boobily.
All right, and we appreciate the information. Let me go to the next caller because we only got about 10 minutes left, and we got three callers still on the line. So, thanks a lot.
Yeah, my phone's dying. You're welcome.
Okay. Thank you. Bye bye. Okay, Jan from Kansas. I got you now. You've been unmuted, Jan from Kansas. Now you've been muted. Let me try unmuting you again. Yep, you've been unmuted. Go right ahead. Jan? Maybe you muted yourself. Try star 6.
You looks unmuted to me.
Yeah. Jan from Kansas. It looks like you came into the box. You know, there was some noise there. Try. All right, let me mute and then unmute you and see if that works. Yeah, try now, Jan. Jan from Kansas. We're not hearing anything. Is your mic plugged in? Okay. Well, I thought I heard something. Try it. No. Okay. We're going to go to the next caller. All right. Let's go to... Peter from New York. Go right ahead, Peter.
Hi, how are you?
Good.
I was wondering, does the sheriff stations, do they have a specific, now they're on a police radio frequency, but is there a ham frequency specific that maybe we should be organizing, like, marine radios, there's channel 16. On a CB, channel 9, is monitored by the police.
Well, what you could do, I think I know what you're talking about. Look at, you know, I bought one of these scanner radios. It just receives. It doesn't, you don't transmit on it, but I could just receive. And it picks up what's called the trunk, which is all the emergency services. And if I go from one area to another, I guess it works itself out. But basically, you can pick up all of the anything that's going over police, fire, ambulance, all of that stuff. And I guess even things outside of that particular categories, you know. But again, you're probably talking about the trunk system that they have set up. It's a national system connected to what's called the trunk.
Whether or not even a protocol for radios may need to even be developed for like a special lock channel for a committee, you know, like I say, there could be a safety committee lock channel, you know.
Every county and every state in the United States has those frequencies. And some of them are just for the sheriffs, and you can listen to some of them, but they don't always tell you, and they don't always... you don't always know how they're hopping frequencies. So they do have some locked. You can call them locked. It's just that you don't know what their sequence is. You can figure it out, but most people don't go to the trouble.
Well, as long as they're listening for us, so that if we have an emergency situation that
Committee
of Safety runs
into,
you know.
I know what you're saying. And what you have to do is you have to get in front of the sheriff and say, we would like to do this for you, sheriff. And you have to negotiate with the sheriff and your committee of correspondence in your committee of safety to work out those details. And it's dependent upon the county. And sometimes counties interfere with each other. When that happens, you've got to deconflict yourself with those two counties. Those two counties have to deconflict themselves and come to some understanding of how the frequencies will be used. Can it be done? Yes. But is there something that you can say, okay, everybody use this number? No. It has to be worked out between the sheriffs of each county.
Okay,
let me go to the next caller because we only got a couple of minutes left. Thanks, Peter.
No problem.
Okay, let's go to, it looks like Brian. What happened to Brian? Did I lose Brian? I guess I did. Okay, Jan, we'll try Jan again from Kansas. Go right ahead, Jan.
Okay, try it again.
We can hear you now, Jan. Go right ahead.
Good.
What was wrong? What happened?
I don't know, but it was twice, wasn't it? It happened twice.
Yeah,
I don't know. I just kept trying. But I wondered if Terry would give us the names of some really good brand names so that we don't get a lemon.
Okay. The Bofang stuff looks like it's pretty good, but the hams that I've talked to say, yeah, you get what you pay for. They're cheap. So they cut some corners that doesn't have everything they need. Is that entirely true? Maybe. I don't know. The thing about hams is that they say, oh, you've got to go choose that. You've got to decide how you're going to use the radio, how you're going to use frequencies, and you need to pick the radio that does everything you want to do. There are the big three or four are Yaesu, Y-E-A-S-U, ICOM, I-C-O-M, and Kenwood, and there's several others that have been good in the past, and now they're not so good. There's good that weren't good in the past, but now they're really good, and it's just where you find it. The key is to get somebody who can work with you in your situation, and we go back to the mentor, and the mentor is called an Elmer. So go back to your Elmer. Establish a good rapport with a ham club in your area. Go back to that Elmer and say, what can you advise me on? What's the good part of you're using that radio? Why? And learn. Does that answer the question? I'm kind of dodging a little bit.
No, it doesn't. That's perfect. Thanks a lot, Terry.
Okay.
Okay. Thanks a lot, Dan. All right. Well, we've come to the end of our program, so we're going to call it an evening. Thanks, everyone, for showing up. And look, let's get involved. Let's do what has to be done to save this nation. Time is short. We need to get involved. Every minute that you can give to this purpose, you should give. And anybody who can support us financially, be well appreciated. All right. Good night, everybody. We'll see you next Monday, Lord willing. Thank you.
Good night.